Good morning. Welcome to the California Coastal Commission. Ms. Miller, may we please have the roll?
Commissioner April. Commissioner Diaz. Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Howell. Commissioner Kinsey. Commissioner Luebano. Commissioner McClure. Commissioner Pastor.
Here.
Commissioner Uranga. Commissioner Garcia Ersic. Vice Chair Turnbull Sanders.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And now to staff, may we please have the agenda changes for today?
Yes, absolutely. And before I get into the agenda changes, a couple of logistical things for folks in the audience. If you intend to address the commission today, if you could go to the front, there's a table out front with staff, and you can fill out a speaker slip for today's agenda items as well as public comment. Also, if you could put your cell phones in quiet mode or turn them off so as not to disrupt the proceedings, that'd be very helpful. Going to the agenda changes today, starting on page 13, this is agenda item 8A. This is the Triple Peace Well application in Marin County. This one was postponed at the applicant's request. Going to page 14, this is the agenda item number 11A. This is the San Luis Obispo County LCP amendment affecting their resource management system. This one, too, was postponed to address some new issues. Going to page 14, this is agenda item 11B. This is a Monterey County LCP amendment with their medical cannabis regulations. This one was postponed at the county's request. Going to page 15, item 14A, says coastal permit application of Southern California Edison for revetment repair at Santa Catalina Island. This one has been moved to consent. Also on page 15, item number 15A, this is the coastal permit amendment consistency certification modification for Level 3 Communication LLC fiber optic cable surveys off the coast of San Luis Obispo County. This one, too, has been moved to consent. And that concludes the agenda changes.
Thank you, Mr. Carl. We will now open the floor for public comment. Each speaker will have approximately 3 minutes to speak, and I would ask that you be ready as I call your name. I'm going to call three at a time, so if we can have first Mr. Jay Humphrey, and after that we will have Leah Renee, and after that we will have Marta Segura. And if you could please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Good morning, Commission. My name is Jay Humphrey. I'm a Costa Mesa resident. A while ago, I spoke to you about a sewer line that was going to go across the southern end of Talbert Park, Talbert Nature Preserve, and it was going to in fact, severely affect Eschen, that area, because it would require ongoing sewage cleanout on a three-month basis. So I wanted you guys to be aware of it. It hadn't come to you yet. They have now quashed that project. It's not going to go forward for a variety of reasons. We won't get into those. However, the city of Costa Mesa has now opted to put a bikeway potentially across that same area at the south base of Talbert Park. And unfortunately, that goes pretty much right between two protected areas, one at the end of, at the north end of Banning Ranch, one at the south end of Talbert Park. And there'll be continuous effect on it. But more importantly, it will also have be concrete. It'll be 10 feet wide of concrete and 4 feet of buffer. So you're looking at a substantial amount of concrete being laid in an area that really has been a natural open area for forever, basically. So what I would like to just pre-start you on is to know that is coming from the city of Costa Mesa to this commission, and if it does, that you make sure you apply all the expertise and care you have done to this community in the past and enforcing the Coastal Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now have Ms. Leah Renee.
Hi, my name is Leah Renee. I'm a resident of California. Can you
see the clock. Where's the clock there? Timing? Okay. So, hi, my name is Leah Renee. So I'm going to talk to you about what's going on in Pacific Palisades Bluffs. First of all, Los Angeles Times today put on the cover of their business section that there's city lawsuits accusing JCPenney, Sears, Kohl's, Macy's of deceptive advertising. We know that there's a lot of things about fake news. And so when Coastal Commission websites publish false or fake information, or I'm going to just show you. Could you, Billy, go up to that? There are little three bars. You're live on the internet right now. Please scroll down to meetings, is it? Correct. And then to archives. And then agendas, right? And then to 2013 January. And if you could scroll down to Thursday, 9B, I think it is. And you will see Scott McPherson for 283 Trino Way, and it's application number 512301. And it says postponed. Do you see how it says postponed? And so that's a big deal that it says postponed. That's really important because that goes to the city of Los Angeles, that goes to your courts, that goes to your geologist, that goes to everybody who's trying to discredit me. Okay, could you hit postpone? No, no, up above, postpone, right up there, but no, that's fine, that's the report. So this is what your staff is doing. Your staff is recommending, if you could scroll down, they're saying there's a demolition of a building, and they recommend it right above. Go the other way, go back to the front page, where it says approved. See, summary of staff recommended. They recommend that you approve this project. I have been denied notice and due process. I have suffered enormous harm. I'm not at hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've lost my business. I could lose my house. I'm threatened. The only good thing that I can say that came out of my 4 years of being stuck here, while everybody discredits me with this, and other things too, is that I've learned that you're doing it to a lot of other people. And so I keep helping them, because sitting here for 8 hours, I try to help. I want to be of service, because if I can't work, I'm going to work here and help fix the problem for all of us, because we only survive with all of us. So the reason why this is so important is that McPherson withdrew that. He withdrew that application. There it is, withdrawn. So why does it say postponed? That's fake. And then it goes to the media, it goes to everybody, and I call them up. I couldn't get the LA Times to report my story. And now I understand why, because they say, well, the Coastal Commission's recommending approval, and they've just postponed it. Well, no, Mr. McPherson removed it. I gave it to your chief counsel, and I gave it to the Deputy Attorney General, Jamie Jordan Patterson. By the way, he submitted an application the next day, which he should have had 6 months or some period of time. He didn't, but anyway, he removed that one, too. Then he submitted another application, and he withdrew that one, too. And he even signed it in his own signature. So why does Scott McPherson get all these advantages that other people don't get? So I'm going to just move right along. Because it's so important, because the LA Times yesterday talked about our sheriff, who is, you know, is he the heartbeat of conspiracy, or was he unaware? The reason that's so important is I brought this to you a year and a half ago, and I showed it online, and I said, your staff doing this, but, you know, giving me 3 minutes at a time, I don't ever get out all the right words or enough. And I can't go to the people at your Long Beach office and that chain of command who are the judge, jury, and executioner and expect a fair hearing. And I can't file a complaint anywhere else because they turn it into a whole other quagmire. Okay, so I'm going to show you what else they're doing. Now they're hurting the people over at Pacific Palisades Bowl. And the reason why Pacific Palisades Bowl is so important is I have followed that for the last couple of years because it's the California Supreme Court opinion, again, the State Attorney General, Deputy Jamie Jordan Patterson, if I'm saying that correctly, argued that, together with Amy Brothers from the City Attorney, who said Pacific Palisades Bowl needed a coastal development permit from the city. They needed from the City of Los Angeles. And it doesn't just say mobile home parks. It says grading and everything else. And it had to get one first. And that is why I came here for 2 years trying to get it. It was very gracious. Jack Ainsworth finally said, yes, it's true, the City of Los Angeles has to go first. Well, now, turns out they have no permit. They don't have any permits in the City of Los Angeles for the project, and they're excavating almost half the Pacific Palisades Bluff. I would have brought the video for you, but I thought it was too important to talk about what's going on, because this is what they told me first. It was just a little raw doesn't exist, so you're just replacing something that never was. But anyway, this is the permit that they had, and I couldn't find that document anywhere in the city. Well, it turns out they're actually operating on a different permit. It's $500,000, and this one's the Keystone Wall. So finally, an inspector from HCD shows up, and I go, which permit is it? And he said, it's both. So he's got two massive 1,000-foot-long retaining walls. There's no permit even in the Coastal Commission for that. And guess what now? It turns out there's a third one. So a huge, massive cut. By the way, it's 40 feet high. It's now excavated in certain areas of the Coastal Plain in an active landslide. It's moving. The city of Los Angeles says it's moving. So I don't understand. So then I go back and I go, okay, Oakland gets help, LA Times. They're boosting their safety, building and safety. And the Coastal Commission says, well, you've got to comply with the law because if you don't, you're going to get a $1 million fee. And I come here for 4 years. I got a serious problem with one of the most important assets of the California coast, the Pacific Palisades Bluff, and almost every politician takes a picture in front of them. And they're being destroyed systematically. And when I asked for the report and the documents, because I was going to buy the CD so I could show it to you and give it to you today, your staff in the Long Beach office has come up with an excuse every day of why I can't get it. And now they're blaming a third-party private entity. And, you know, I would have fallen for that 4 years ago. But after 4 years of being here, it's just another, you know, shell game. And there's quite a paper trail of that shell game. So this is a formal complaint. I request a formal investigation for all of the things that are happening in that Long Beach office.
Thank you,
and
Ms.
the full
Renee.
Chain of command.
Thank you, Ms. Renee.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Next, we'll have Ms. Marta Segura. Hi, Marta. Good morning.
Commissioners, how are you? I'm here representing, my name is Marta Segura, and I'm here representing the Center for Biological Diversity, and to talk a little bit about our federal offshore oil fracking. We are here to formally request that you request Obama to use his executive power under Section 12A of the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act to permanently withdraw unleased waters off California from availability to oil and gas leasing. He did it before in the coast of Alaska, so there's a precedent for it, and it also endangers our state coastal waters. And there's really no such thing as a safe offshore oil drilling and oil transportation. So I know that I'm sort of preaching to the choir here, but I also understand, having been a commissioner, that you need your constituents to come here and make requests that are important to all of us and all of you. And so I guess I don't need the whole 3 minutes, but I do want to let you know that we're partners in this. If you need our support, if you need our help, we're definitely here to be a resource, because expanding offshore oil drilling at this time in California will set a terrible precedent for other coasts as well, since we're the ones that sort of set the national trend and being leaders in not just the environment, but in other policy issues. So I think it's critically important to do this at this point in time. And I guess that's the end of that request, but I also wanted to say that the Center for Biological Diversity is an ally to Saving Banning Ranch. So it's also another critically important habitat for California, and I know that you all have been updated on that. Thank you so much. I appreciate your support.
Thank you. After Ms. Segura, we're now going to have Eugene Solomon, followed by Ann Herman, followed by Lechi Isha.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Eugene Solomon, and I've taken a half a day off of work today to visit you from Redondo Beach. In Redondo Beach, in the coming weeks, you're going to hear about a plan called the Waterfront Project being brought before your staff. I tell you that I stand here by myself today, but not alone. I tell you that in the interval, the developer and his surrogates will provide your staff with mythical dreams of the perfect project. A gilded lily, but it's fool's gold. It's a poison chalice that Redondo Beach has drunk from. It is seeking to exchange our precious resource of a harbor and turn it into a shopping center. This proposed plan will marginalize or eliminate harbor-dependent recreational uses, redu- reduce our seaside lagoon by a third, double the development while increasing the parking only by 7%, eliminate boat slips, eliminate trailer parking, require SUP users to valet park their Ford and equipment while they go to a 45-foot tall, 600-foot long concrete behemoth west of Harbor Drive, obscuring harbor views, blocking out the bluffs, blocking out the ocean. Perhaps worst of all is the plan they have for a boat ramp. The boat ramp they've planned has been created as a compromise of public safety. Harbor Patrol, several of them with over 100 years of experience, have described this location where they plan to put the boat ramp as inherently unsafe. But the city and the developer are determined to put the boat ramp there because placing it in the most logical location, the one that has been recommended by the EIR and by everyone who has viewed this program in the harbor there, would interfere with the developer's food court. We are marginalizing our harbor uses in favor of non-coastal dependent commercial uses. The public use marginalized, public safety compromised, public resources impaired, public access restricted. The city staff, in reviewing the LCP and in reviewing the zoning, have said, oh, well, we're approving this because it's largely compliant. Not compliant, largely compliant. This is not acceptable. You should be in compliance with your LCP and your zoning. Lastly, I'll tell you that recently we prepared a group of residents, an initiative, to be placed on the March 17 ballot and has been approved. Nearly 7,000 people signed this initiative. That's 15% of the registered voters in Redondo Beach. I stand here by myself, but not alone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Ann Hopman. Hopman, could you please state your name for the record?
Good morning. My name is Ann Hopman. I live at 31905 Pacific Coast Highway, Malibu. With my family for 20 years, we've been in that home. I'm here to ask you to intervene. We have a package, actually. I don't know if it's been distributed. I'm asking you to intervene to require the City of Malibu to enforce the Malibu Local Coastal Plan and your conditions of permit approval for the development of Encinal Canyon. This case serves as a model for the methods developers are using to dismantle the body of environmental laws and regulations protecting the California coast that we have all embraced since the enactment of the Coastal Act. The commission issued a notice of violation to a developer from Texas who splayed dozens of roads across the hillside in the 80s on that cover photograph. You can go to page 16 to see the map as to the location of this 140-acre assemblage opposite Broad Beach. The commission approved a permit for the certificate of compliance on the 30-acre lot for 4102 with five conditions, including restoration of the roads, the illegally created roads, requirement for an OTD for an open space deed restriction over the Encinal Creek, deed restriction over the roads, deed restriction prohibiting future subdivision, and elimination of proposed secondary access along Encinal Creek to PCH. Developers sued the Coastal Commission and lost the commission's right to impose these permit conditions was enforced and affirmed. Forward to 2015, stratospheric rise in prices for coastal real estate developer gets a new strategy for bypassing the Coastal Act. We'll just draw the roads on Google. We'll grade them with giant bulldozers, then we'll go to the city and get an over-counter permit. And that's what's happened. Now, that's through open space deed restrictions, all the work that you talked about yesterday regarding the preservation of open space. I've had a deed restriction on my property, and I protect it like it's sacred ground. And the second phase of the strategy is to sue to get an equitable easement through my house, demolish our home, and of course, under the auspices that, of course, everyone deserves an equitable easement to bypass the Coastal Act. Well, obviously, we're not pleased, and this isn't going to happen, because if this happens, there's just no Coastal Act. So, anyway, if, you know, you spent taxpayer money and years to win a court case against the prior developer, this is not too difficult a situation. The city of Malibu is just too lax, and they removed the four properties for 140 acres from the LCP appeals jurisdiction map with no findings. These OTD permits are being issued for massive subdivisions are all being published, and there's a little too much of a cozy relationship. So I think that this is something that you can work on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will next have Mr. and Ms. Isha from Wishtoyo Chumash Foundation. And could you please state your name for the record?
Good morning, commissioners. Yes, my name is Luhui Isha.
Thank you very much.
I'm Barbarenyo Chumash, and I am also the Cultural Resources Director for Wishtoyo Chumash Foundation. So on behalf of Wishtoyo Chumash Foundation, we are asking the California Coastal Commission to formally request President Obama to use his authority under the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act to permanently protect federal waters off the coast of California from new offshore oil and gas leasing. Permit protections are needed to safeguard California from expanded offshore drilling. As you are all aware, the Santa Barbara Channel is one of the most biologically and culturally rich and diverse seascapes in the world. It contains a vast array of habitats and marine life, including giant kelp forests and threatened and endangered blue whales, sea otters, and sea turtles. The channel is also the place of origin and the ancestral home of our Chumash peoples for more than 13,000 years. The channel holds the most sacred site to all Chumash, the place of the Western Gate, Pumkak, where the passage of our souls ascend to when we die. The Santa Barbara Channel Islands and coastland hold innumerable submerged Chumash village sites, sacred sites of our ancestors' remains, traditional fishing ground, and historical tumul or canoe trade routes, where today we make our annual tumul crossing from the mainland coast to our island of origin, Limu, Santa Cruz Island. In addition, the California coast is home to approximately 40 coastal native nations whose indigenous traditions were born in and are dependent on the health of the bioregions throughout coastal California. California generally prohibits new offshore oil and gas leasing in state waters because drilling causes oil spills that foul our beaches, destroy submerged Native American villages and sacred sites, and kills wildlife. Offshore drilling also pollutes our air, contaminates our water, and worsens the climate crisis. Federal waters off the California coast deserve permanent protection. Unfortunately, Section 12A of the Outer Continental Land Act gives President Obama the authority to ensure such protection. If we do not act, in the words of renowned food critic of Los Angeles, Jonathan Gold, no one will enjoy the foul taste of extinction. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will have Mati Nahua and Jennifer Savage and Susan Jordan. And I apologize if I have mispronounced your name. It is in cursive.
We got to start learning the language here. My name is Mati Waya, Executive Director of Wishtoyo Foundation, Chumash Ceremonial Leader, Elder, Representative of our environment. And we preserve and protect the environment through culture. A lot of you have witnessed Standing Rock and what's going on there to preserve through prayer and protection the health of our waterways. Let's think of this colonialism of how we have come to be where we're at today. We're preserving our culture, our coastal islands, to our mountains and rivers through litigation, through science, through consuls. By the way, thank you, council members, for allowing me this moment. And you know how challenging it is to have to watch the frog be cooked slowly, where it's piecemeal, they're permitted, and all these different efforts that we take to protect our home. We're here in a country that's born of violence, and we've adjusted and have survived thousands of years at a place we call home here for the Chumash people. I'm asking you to please consider the preservation of our coastal waters by not allowing fracking or oil drilling. Are we really here to challenge permits or proposals, are we here for human rights or nature's rights? That's what you represent. And I'll be brief about it in the fact that, you know, we're putting ourselves here in front of you, not only to share our culture, but to share the fact that the birthright of our youth, and that includes your children, deserve healthy water, land, and air. We're going to have challenges with this new administration who's going to want to gut the environmental protection laws. And we're going to have to all come together, because this smoke and mirror approach to government, including yourselves, we have to be transparent. We have to put it on the table. We have to fight by any means possible. Standing Rock, we just have a crew coming back today, and we've sent others prior. And we're part of the challenge of the cases of the lawsuit and the right of treaties. Let's don't continue that path of demising the ancient people that were here way before the name America was here. I pledge allegiance to my culture. There's no tradition in this America. It's too young. But let's start somewhere as a human family and protect our coastal waters, because you have every right and the position to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will have Jennifer Savage, Susan Jordan, and Kathy Knight, and that's all the speaker cards I have for today.
Thank you. And I believe Susan ceded her time to me.
Thank you. So we'll give you 6 minutes.
Thank you. I'll try to be quick.
Thank you.
Jennifer Savage, Surf Rider Foundation, California Policy Manager. I'm speaking today on behalf of our San Francisco chapter. Next slide, please. The Surf Rider Foundation has serious concerns about the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department's unpermitted seawall at Sharp Park Golf Course and implores commission staff to take quick enforcement action against this unpermitted seawall at Sharp Park. So I'm going to share with you the story of the past few years. Next slide, please. You probably are all familiar with Sharp Park, but just in case, here's a map showing where it is. Just north of Pacifica, it's just south of Daly City. Next slide, please. So in 2010, before the unpermitted berm, this is what Sharp Park looked like at the beach. Next slide, please. And in 2013, this is what it looked like after the rocks were dumped. The department has been violating the Coastal Act for several years by constructing and maintaining an unpermitted rock revetment at Sharp Park without a coastal development permit. Next slide, please. You can see that there's riprap in excess of the initial berm. It's clearly not maintenance or repair, and thus it requires a coastal development permit. Since at least 2013, Surf Rider Foundation San Francisco chapter has provided the commission with repeated notices of the violation, in part plainly visible from the placement of these large boulders along the sides and far exceeding the footprint of the original berm. Next slide. So again, we have submitted several letters regarding this over the years. Next slide, please. And so the commission did investigate. They found that there was a violation, and the commission, the department was notified of this. They were given a 6-month extension, they were told to file a coastal development application. And next slide, please. They then submitted an incomplete application. They were given a 6-month extension to submit a complete one, which brought us up to October 13. And the commission said that if materials were not received, the application would be deemed withdrawn. Next slide, please. And yet, the department missed that extended deadline. Next slide, please. And this has gone on every 6 months for 3.5 years. That's 7 extensions for an unpermitted revetment, which essentially makes the Coastal Act meaningless in this case. Next slide, please. So in January of this year, Surf Rider respectfully asked that the commission stop granting extensions and take appropriate enforcement action against the unpermitted revetment. And yet, two additional extensions have been granted. Next slide, please. So this is the beach north of the golf course. As you can see, there's not really a lot of beach there. We respectfully ask that the commission honor its obligation to maximize public access. Next slide, please. Oh, I'm sorry, next slide. An extra slide in there. We have 4 things that we're asking. That you honor your obligation to maximize public access, recreation, and coastal resources. Next slide, please. And that you honor your own guidelines on sea level rise that were adopted last
area, that this project comes out of significant work undertaken by Caltrans, Marin County, GGNRA, your staff, and others to develop design guidelines for these types of highway projects. The design guidelines have provided a really successful recipe for addressing the significant coastal resource issues associated with the projects, including related to the scenic landscape of Highway 1 in Marin. This project, like others that have come before, meet those guidelines, and we think it successfully addresses issues, in our view. So the objection doesn't change our opinion that a waiver is still appropriate in this case. And as to the other waiver, I'm not aware of any objections or controversy surrounding that project, so we're looking for the Commission's concurrence on both of these items in the DD's report.
Do I see any objection to unanimous concurrence on these items? Seeing no objection, we concur.
Thank you. There's nothing on the consent calendar. That brings us to item number 7A. I do have a PowerPoint for this one. So item number 7A is an appeal of a Sonoma County coastal permit approving a residential addition in the Carmet area north of Bodega Bay. Next slide, please. So on slide 2, you see a regional map on the left and an aerial view of the project location. It's about 5 miles north of Bodega Bay in the small residential area known as Carmet. The project site is the 11,000 square foot lot outlined in yellow here in the right photo. As you can see, the lot is in the second row of lots inland from Highway 1, with the Pacific Ocean seaward of the highway to the left in the slide. The Carmet neighborhood is developed with a number of one- and two-story single-family residents, and you can see the neighborhood layout here. Next slide, please. The appellant contends the county-approved project would violate LCP policies protecting public views and community character. The project includes a second-story addition of 663 square feet, as well as two new roof decks, a new covered patio, a remodeled porch, and a remodeled porch. On this slide 3 here, you see a before and after rendering of the project as seen from northbound Highway 1 looking inland. The project would increase the existing residence height by roughly 6 feet, mostly in the middle of the footprint. I note that the house looks a little faint to the left of this house. The house that looks a little faint to the left of this house is actually in front of it. That's just the way that the rendering was done. The project meets all LCP mass and scale requirements, and as you can see here in slide 3, it doesn't much alter the public view from the highway. In addition, this is the inland view, and the views to the west are the real attraction when driving on Highway 1, and they are unaffected by the project. Next slide, please. Here on slide 4, you see the site from southbound Highway 1, Pacific Ocean's to your right. In this view, the house is obscured as you approach it in the top slide by a row of cypress trees, and is obscured by both the cypress trees and the residence that was fronting it as you get closer to the site in the lower slide. Next slide, please. In terms of its effect on public views towards the sea from the inland streets of Carmet, a view that's significantly less important than the Highway 1 view, the impacts appear relatively insignificant. Slide 5 shows the view incursion is minimal from this perspective. Next slide, please. In terms of compatibility, the 64 homes in the Carmet area are fairly visually diverse, with a range of one- and two-story structures and a variety of designs. Slide 6 here gives you a sense of the massing and design of some of the two-story structures in the neighborhood, as well as the variety of designs you can find. The project to us appears to be consistent with this mix. And for reference, the house in the top right corner on this slide is the house that's located between the project site and Highway 1. Finally, regarding the appellant's local notice contentions, the county provided notice as specified in the LCP, including mailed notice to property owners and residents near the site, published newspaper notices, and posted notices near the site, all consistent with the LCP. As far as we can tell, the public was appropriately informed of the pending project and actively participated, including as evidenced by the appeal to the Board of Supervisors by the appellant before you today. Next slide, please. So in short, we don't believe the appeal raises any substantial LCP conformance issues, and we recommend the Commission find no substantial issue and decline to take jurisdiction over the coastal permit for the project. The motion necessary for the recommendations found on page 4 of the staff report, and that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. We do have public comment on this matter. Again, public comment is restricted to
morning to defend our modest residential remodel in Bodega Bay. We concur that Goetigale's appeal does not rise to the level of substantial issue. We have reviewed LUP 749 through 54 and IP section 26C, and I would just like to highlight much of which has already been discussed this morning, how our project meets or exceeds those parameters. First and foremost, compatibility and visual impact were of utmost concerns during this design and remodel. Factors that we considered were that although the allowable maximum roof line east of California Highway 1 is 24 feet, the proposed height of the roof of our redesign is only 2110 feet. And that is just a net increase of 5 feet 10 inches from the current roof line top. The top of our finished roof line will be 2 feet lower than our neighbors directly to the west, the house that sits on Highway 1. Number two, the finished mass of our second story addition is situated to the middle and back of the house. It's intentionally tucked between the trees that were pictured in the photograph in order to minimize visual impact on both public and private views from all vantage points. All vantage points were considered. Number three, the total size of the completed structure is 22% of lot space size. This is well below the maximum of 35% allowable for structure size. Number four, there are many statements in Goetigale's appeal that I could take issue with that are erroneous, but contrary to what she states, 14 homes out of the 16 Carmet are either raised ranches or two-story homes. This includes our adjacent neighbor to the west, whose roof line is 24 feet. All of these factors were thoughtfully employed throughout the design process in order to reduce the visual impact from public roads and to create a home that would fit seamlessly into both the neighborhood as well as the natural surroundings through its low profile and sensitive design. Thank you very much, commissioners.
Thank you. Do I have a motion? Commissioner Pastor.
Yeah, one quick question on the land use plan, Exhibit 8, on visual resources, when was that prepared? Do you know when that was prepared?
You're asking about Exhibit 8?
Yeah, the land use, the visual resources section.
Yes.
Do you know when that was prepared? Approximately.
Oh, you mean the LCP?
Yeah.
I think it was back in the 80s originally.
Okay. Yeah, because one thing I noticed is on page 5 of 15 of Exhibit A, which is part page 171 of the report, it says that Carmet is a 60-lot residential subdivision developed in the late 1940s. Homes are one-story with flat gravel roofs and painted wood exteriors. Landscaping is suburban with lawns and flowers and a few trees. And then it goes on and it says most of the remaining lots are unbuildable. However, any new development should be compatible with the existing homes since there is a distinct design unity to the subdivision. And it says that, again, in that homes are one-story. And then when you go a couple pages later, it does mention, as the applicant of the project said, that there is a limit of 24 feet and they are below that. So maybe when they update this, they might want to think about changing their description of what Carmet is in their visual resources section, because again, it does say the homes there are one story and that future development should be consistent with that. So just a thought when I was going through that. Thanks.
Sure. Excuse me, Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Here we go. It just went out on me. But I move that the commission determine that appeal number A2-SON-16-0093 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed in section 306 of the
so it'll bring us to item number 9, which is going into the Central Coast District and the district director's report. And today in that report, we're reporting 6 waivers, 3 immaterial amendments, 2 extensions, and 1 emergency permit. I'll note that we did receive an objection to the San Luis Obispo County Sanitary District waiver. This was for temporary trailers at their wastewater facility in Oceano, but we continue to believe that those temporary trailers won't result in any kind of significant coastal resource impacts, and we continue to recommend the waiver. As to the other items, I'm not aware of any controversy or objections, and so we're looking for the Commission's concurrence on all of these in the DD's report.
Thank you. At the request of the Vice Chair, I've agreed to hold the gavel for a few minutes while she has a prior commitment. And so what we're looking for is any unwillingness for concurrence on these on the Central Coast Director's report. If there's no unwillingness, then we do concur.
Thank you, Commissioner Kinsey. There's nothing on the consent calendar, and items 11A and B were both postponed earlier. So that does bring us down to item number 11C. This is an LCP amendment for Santa Cruz County's vacation rental ordinance. I'd note for context that the county is a community that long ago approached this issue with vacation rentals head on, worked with the community through a very long and inclusive process, as well as with your staff, to develop a set of rules and regulations for vacation rentals that have been held up as a model for others statewide. Those rules have been in place for over 5 years now, and they continue to provide an appropriate balance that allows for the rentals while ensuring they appropriately fit within the community, including through limitations. So the amendment before you today makes some refinements to the ordinance, and it also adds in special area rules for the area in and around Davenport on the county's north coast. We've worked with the county to address some procedural issues and are in agreement on the suggested modifications. Thus, we recommend you approve the LCP amendment with the modifications. The motions, and there's 2 of them, are found on page 4 of the staff report, and that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Were there any ex partes on this matter? I do not have any speaker cards for this. I'll bring it back to the commission, and I'll call on Commissioner Groom.
Thank you, Chair Kinsey. I move the commission reject implementation plan amendment number LCP3SCO16-0052-1 as submitted by the County of Santa Cruz and ask for a yes vote.
Do we have a second? The motion is second. Do you wish to speak to your motion or second?
No.
Is there any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing no opposition, we do reject it as submitted. And there's a second motion.
I move the commission certify implementation plan major amendment number LCP3SCO16-0052-1 if it is modified as suggested in this staff report and recommend a yes vote. No, I mean, I agree with Dan, with Mr. Carl. They've really done an excellent job in Santa Cruz. Worked very hard and have had a number of public hearings.
Thank you. Okay, the makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? With that, then, we do certify the implementation plan major amendment and complete this item. Thank you.
Thank you. That will take us to item number 11D. And this is a Morro Bay LCP amendment. It's designed to make some changes in light of state law on inclusionary housing, including with respect to density bonuses. We work very closely with the city on the amendment language, including to ensure that coastal resources continue to be protected when such applications are considered. We're in agreement with the city and recommend approval as submitted. The motions, and there are 2 of them in this case as well, are found on page 3 of the staff report, and that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this? I have no speaker cards on this. Commissioner Howe?
I move the Commission Certified Land Use Plan Amendment LCP3MRB1600562, Part A, as submitted by the City of Morro Bay, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Would you like to speak to your motion? Makers of the motion are asking for a yes vote. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Then we do certify the land use plan amendment. And there's a second motion.
I move that the commission reject implementation plan amendment number LCP3MRB1600562, Part A, as submitted by the City of Morro Bay, and I recommend a no vote.
Second.
Very good. Makers of the motion. commissioner asking for no vote. Any unwillingness for unanimous no vote? Seeing no opposition to that, then we do certify the implementation plan amendment as submitted by the City of Morro Bay. And that completes this item, and we hand it back to the Vice Chair.
And that will bring us to item number 11E, and this is another Morro Bay LCP amendment that's responding to state law, and this time it's to add a reasonable accommodation section to the LCP that allows for minor changes to certain standards if required to ensure equal access to housing for folks with disabilities. We also worked with the city on this amendment language to ensure appropriate protections, and we're in agreement with the city. In this case, recommend it be approved as a de minimis LCP amendment. Thus, in this case, as opposed to motions, we're looking for the commission's concurrence on that determination.
Thank you. Do I see any opposition to unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we do concur.
Thank you. That brings us to the last of the LCP amendments, again for Morro Bay, again responding to state law. This one's designed to add standards for a variety of housing types, including emergency shelters, transitional housing, supportive housing, employee housing, and single-room occupancy housing. We don't think this amendment raises any significant coastal resource concerns, and we recommend it be approved as submitted. There's a single motion to do it, and that's found on staff report page 4.
Do I have a motion?
Commissioner Howell.
Commissioner Howell.
Thank you. I move that the commission reject implementation plan amendment number LCP3 MRB 1600562 Part C as submitted by the City of Morro Bay.
Second.
And what vote are you recommending?
I'm recommending a no vote.
No vote. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No.
Would you like to speak to your motion? May I please have concurrence on this? Do I have any opposition for a unanimous yes vote? Unanimous no vote. Seeing none, we do approve that.
Good morning, commissioners. So that takes us to the energy portion of the agenda and item 12, the Deputy Director report, which contains one de minimis waiver. We have not received any comments, are not aware of any objections, and therefore seek your concurrence in approving this waiver.
Do I hear any opposition for a unanimous concurrence?
Mm-hmm.
We do concur.
Thank you. That takes us to item 13, the consent calendar. As Dan reported earlier, we moved items 14A and 15A to the consent calendar. You should have a short addendum with a minor change for item 14A, the application by Southern California Edison. We have received no objections, are aware of no controversy concerning these items, and recommend that the commission approve them under the consent calendar.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for consent?
So moved.
Would you like to speak to your motion?
No.
No? Do I see unanimous approval of consent? Anyone in opposition? Seeing no opposition, we do approve the consent calendar.
Thank you. So then that takes us to item 14B, which is the Horizontal Development LLC application. And before Cassidy Teufel gives the staff presentation on this item, I just want to note that you do have an addendum for this that includes correspondence as well as some recommended modifications to the conditions and the findings in response to various conversations that we have had with the applicant, as well as a number of parties who commented on the staff recommendation. I did want to note also that late yesterday we received an email from Mr. Tommy John Rosas, who requested that we remove his objection to this project. And indicated in that email that he now supports the project as proposed by staff with the changes that we are recommending in the addendum. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Cassidy.
Can I get the presentation for 14B, the staff presentation?
We might not be.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Next item is the application by Horizontal Development LLC. The applicant's proposal is to consolidate. The applicant's proposal is to consolidate its current and future operations on the Banning Ranch oil field into two of the most heavily industrialized areas of the property. These are referred to as the northern and southern oil remainder areas and are shown on this figure as these areas in gray, along with the access way connecting them. These two sites cover roughly 13 acres and currently contain close to 40 active oil wells, in addition to processing, storage, and shipping facilities used to prepare the extracted oil for transport off-site by truck. Some of these facilities can be seen here in this image in the central portion of the northern remainder site. As you can see, the existing equipment includes storage tanks, pipelines, and a variety of large processing and treatment devices. The image also gives you an indication of the existing paved roads and cleared ground on the site and its location near the base of the bluffs that separate the lowland and mesa portions of the Banning Ranch property. This is a pretty dark image, but the bluffs are approximately here and are between 20 and 60 feet in height. This image shows the entirety of the site, and the colored dots indicate the location of historic wells in green that have been abandoned, and the colored dots indicate active wells. On this oil remainder north site, the applicant would install a new scaled-down set of modern processing equipment that would replace the higher capacity aging equipment currently in use and would drill up to 62 new oil wells. This work would be carried out in an incremental fashion over the course of 10 or more years. The 62 proposed wells represent a maximum level that would only be reached if supported by both market and production conditions in the future. As indicated by the areas highlighted in red in this slide, the new wells would be installed in linear rows within the northern portion of the site. Also shown on this slide, highlighted in this area, is the location of the new processing and treatment facility. Because this new facility would only be designed for a maximum production capacity of 500 barrels per day, it would be much more compact than the existing facility that is designed for a production capacity that is 10 times greater. Located adjacent to Pacific Coast Highway, the southern oil remainder area supports a similar mix of existing wells and facilities. It differs in that most of the existing development is owned and operated by the City of Newport Beach. This area here in white is their production and processing facility, and these are the city's wells. Also similar to the northern site, the southern oil remainder area is largely paved and located at the base of the bluff system. Within this site, the applicant would install a line of up to 13 new wells along the eastern side of the site, and two wells on the other side of the access road here. The applicant would also install a compact processing and treatment facility similar to the one proposed in the northern site. This facility would be installed here in the central area adjacent to the City of Newport Beach's processing facility. In addition to development in the oil remainder areas, the applicant would also abandon the three wells it owns outside of these sites, replace the above-ground pipelines along the access corridor connecting the two sites, and relocate several office and equipment structures from outside of the oil remainder areas to the sites within them. The wells to be abandoned are located on the upland mesa portion of the oil field as shown in this slide with the red dots. One of the primary Coastal Act issues raised by this project is its potential to adversely affect sensitive habitat areas, including ESHA and wetlands. As indicated on this slide, the northern project site is surrounded by areas of both ESHA, shown in green here, and wetlands, shown in blue. The location of these areas is based on a variety of habitat surveys, including those carried out in September and October of this year and confirmed last month by the Commission staff ecologists during a site visit. Additional wetlands are also present within a narrow drainage channel that bisects the site and directs surface runoff from the mesa into the wetlands on the west of the site. This open drainage channel is proposed to be replaced with a covered culvert. Because this project involves the expansion of an energy facility, the proposed wetland fill is an allowable use under the Coastal Act. Mitigation for this fill would be provided by special conditions 10 through 12, which require the wetland to be replaced at a ratio of 4:1. Apart from this, no other direct impacts to wetland habitat or ESHA would occur as a result of this project. However, to help ensure that indirect impacts to these habitats are avoided, such as those from disturbance and degradation associated with noise, lighting, emissions, and development activities in adjacent areas, special conditions 5, 6, and 9 would establish protective buffer areas. Working closely with commission staff, the applicant configured its project consistent with the buffer requirements included in these conditions. On the northern site, this results in buffers of between 50 and 100 feet from proposed development and areas of wetlands and ESHA. This would include maintaining a minimum buffer of 100 feet from all areas of coastal California gnatcatcher ESHA. These areas are located near the southeastern edge of the site, approximately here, and the line in yellow here represents the 100-foot buffer area. Although these buffers extend into the existing site and new developments would not be permitted within them, existing equipment and structures within the buffers would remain. The only exception to the 100-foot buffer for ESHA at the northern project site would be for two areas with populations of the rare southern tar plant. These areas are shown in green in this slide and highlighted with the red arrows. The project development would be located between 25 and 50 feet from the southern edges of the two plant populations, as they were mapped earlier this year. While this distance is less than the 50 to 100-foot buffer that has been required by the commission for southern tar plant in other cases, commission staff ecologist believes it would be appropriate considering three primary factors. One is the southern tar plant's annual nature and variable population boundaries in this area that in past years have been located much further from the project site. Another is the additional buffering provided by the concrete block wall and solid fence that is proposed to be installed at the edge of the buffer. And the final factor is the requirement in Special Condition 6 for the applicant to develop and implement a southern tar plant habitat enhancement plan that involves the removal of out-of-service and abandoned equipment, materials, and construction debris currently being stored within and adjacent to these areas. Examples of this abandoned equipment and debris is shown in this slide and are located approximately within this red area indicated here. This is an additional image of the equipment that would be removed, and this would be removed as well. In total, the removal of this material is expected to result in the creation of up to several hundred square feet of new habitat directly adjacent to the existing southern tar plant populations, and would enhance these populations by providing them with a significant increase in suitable habitat into which they could naturally expand. On the southern project site, the applicant has recently reconfigured its project to remain between 50 and 70 feet from the areas of coastal California gnatcatcher ESHA located at the east of the site. Although this buffer distance is less than the 100 feet typically found to be appropriate, considering the type of proposed development and the approximately 40-foot high bluff that separates the development from the ESHA, the commission staff ecologists believe that in this case, the reduced buffer distance would provide adequate protection. Although somewhat counterintuitive, the oil wells that would be located adjacent to the buffer area would present less of a disturbance and degradation risk to the adjacent habitat than other types of development, such as commercial and residential. This is largely because once installed, an oil well requires little day-to-day activity and would be a fairly static structure. This allowance for reduced buffers based on a consideration of site and project-specific circumstances is consistent with past commission actions where reduced buffers around gnatcatcher ESHA have been allowed for more passive development or where buffering devices such as sound walls have been used. In addition to biological resources, another Coastal Act issue raised by the project is the potential to adversely affect cultural resources. Although some have noted that the entire property has cultural value, the only known cultural resource site within the project areas appears to be avoided by the development as proposed and through implementation of the recommended ESHA and wetland buffers. However, the precise limits of the site have not been delineated, and other unknown sites may also be present elsewhere. Commission staff reached out directly to each of the several dozen Native American individuals, tribal organizations, and groups that have an affiliation or expressed interest in the project area. And these two issues are among those of primary concern that were raised by the three parties that submitted comments to the Commission in response. Commission staff followed up and consulted with all three parties and developed a new recommended condition, Special Condition 23, included in the addendum, in partial response to their input and concerns. While two of these parties remain in opposition to the project, it is my understanding that all three support this new condition and recognize it as a significant improvement that would increase the likelihood that the project would be able to avoid adverse impacts to cultural resources. This condition would require the applicant to work with appropriate experts and interested parties to develop and implement a plan to survey the project areas for cultural resource sites, delineate the boundaries of known and discovered sites, evaluate their significance, and if necessary, adapt the project configuration in response. In combination with the requirement to have cultural resource monitors present during all construction activities provided through Special Condition 22, Commission staff believes that this condition would provide adequate mitigation for potential cultural resource impacts. The final Coastal Act issue raised by the project is geologic hazards, primarily associated with fracking, induced seismicity, and earthquake faults. I've worked closely with the Commission staff geologists to understand and evaluate each of these issues. Regarding fracking, I would note that hydraulic fracturing has not been carried out on this oil field in the past, and the applicant is not proposing any fracking activities as part of this project. Further, it is Commission staff's understanding that fracking is not a viable technique to use with the subsurface geologic formations that are present on the Banning Ranch oil field. While steam injection is a technique used on this field, this technique is very different from fracking, has been used here for many decades, and is closely regulated by the California Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources. Regarding induced seismicity, or the triggering of earthquakes due to human activity, research on this subject indicates that it is most typically associated with new oil fields, rapid drawdown of subsurface reservoirs, or the significant injection of wastewater into subsurface formations, such that the pressure in these formations increases sharply. None of these are characteristics of the Banning Ranch oil field or the proposed project. Finally, regarding earthquake faults, as this slide indicates, the Newport-Inglewood Fault is the dominant fault system surrounding the project area. Although the extensive geotechnical investigations carried out on the Banning Ranch oil field over the past several decades have not revealed an active fault within or adjacent to either of the project sites, and neither of them are within designated fault setback zones, active faults are found on the upland mesa portion of the field, and the project sites may be subject to significant ground motion. This image indicates the location of the project site and the location of the active faults that have been identified. Although both the county and California Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources drilling and well permits require a variety of safety measures to prevent spills, due to the geologic hazards on the site, Special Conditions 3 and 17 would require the applicant to develop and implement a spill prevention and response plan, as well as to submit a geotechnical report for the project developed by an engineering geologist. The applicant would also be required to implement the recommendations of this report, including those for foundation design, pipeline supports, fault zone setback, bluff slope setbacks, and liquefaction settlement and ground motion mitigation. With implementation of these and other special conditions included with the staff report and addendum, Commission staff recommends the Commission approve this permit, the permit for this project. The motion and resolution may be found on page 4 of the staff report. I also was aware that our chief counsel, Chris Peterson, has some comments he would like to include.
Thank you very much, Mr. Teufel. Yesterday, the Commission did receive a communication from a member of the public with a question regarding the potential use of the staff report by other agencies to satisfy their own obligations under CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. As background, the Commission has a certified regulatory program under CEQA, which basically means that the Commission can satisfy its own obligations under CEQA through its implementation of the Coastal Act. Other agencies normally may not rely on Coastal Commission documents to satisfy their CEQA obligations. However, the CEQA guidelines do provide that if staff undertake certain additional steps, then other agencies can rely on commission staff reports findings for their CEQA obligations. In this instance, no other agencies have indicated to staff that they intended to rely upon the Coastal Commission staff report for their CEQA obligations. Therefore, staff did not undertake the additional steps that would be necessary in order to allow them to do so. Therefore, you know, if the commission acts to approve this proposed development, the staff report will satisfy the commission's CEQA obligations, but isn't a document that other agencies could rely upon for that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now have ex partes. Any ex partes on this matter? Let's start to my left with Commissioner Howell. Okay, anything? Go ahead and you can disclose your ex parte.
I spoke with Mr. Terry Welch over the phone. We went over their concerns about the project and the special conditions. Yesterday, December the 8th, about 11 a.m. And then I also had an in-person conversation with the consultant on the project, Horizontal Drilling, and we also spoke about the number of conditions and how they were dealing with those concerns. Also yesterday at 8 a.m.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure?
Yes, I had an ex parte with Don Schmidt. It's on file in the addendum on page 241.
Thank you. Commissioner Uranga?
I too had an ex parte with Ron Schmidt, and it's on file.
Commissioner Kinsey?
Thank you. I too had an ex parte with Don Schmidt on behalf of Horizontal Drilling. I submitted my ex parte on the 6th of December, and it is on file.
Any other ex parte?
Oh, in addition to that, thank you. Excuse me. In addition to that, I received an email last night from Mr. Schmitz requesting time to the amount of time to present since our chair had left. I forwarded that email to the executive staff, and I believe that you've addressed Mr. Schmitz about the time today. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We will now hear from the applicant, applicant's representative, Mr. Don Schmidt. He will have 20 minutes in which to make his presentation, and he may withhold some of that information. He may withhold some of that time for rebuttal if he so chooses.
Madam Chair, do we have a stopwatch here anywhere, or just a yellow and a red? Okay. For the record, my name is Don Schmitz. If you will, one way or the other, stop me 15 minutes so I can retain 5 minutes for the rebuttal, I would be grateful. I am here on behalf of the applicants Horizontal Development LLC. And before I begin, I would just like to thank your staff. They did, it was a tough job. They negotiated very aggressively with us, but they were very clear and professional in their dealings with us, and it's very much appreciated. So they've also given you a pretty good outline and understanding of this very old oil field. It's been in production for 70 years. This is a 1940s photograph. This is a photograph from 1965. This is an important date because this is when secondary and tertiary recovery began within that oil field. That's a technical way of saying we began steam injection. We've been doing it for 50 years to recover the oil, and there's never been any problems. There's never been any seismicity. There's never been any of the steam coming to the surface. It's been very closely regulated by Dogger. It's a tried and proven method in the porous sandstone, which is the formation for this oil field. This is a picture from 1967. I put it in there, and I want you to take special note of the northerly ORA. This is a picture where you can see that, as staff has already testified, this is a heavily industrialized area for the oil field. This is where the storage tanks were, the separation facilities. the collection areas and the trucking facility. This is one of the reasons why it was chosen in consultation with your staff as the appropriate place for the consolidation project, which is before you today. The joint use area goes back to the 40s as well. This is essentially the road and the pipeline corridor that connects the two ORAs, and then you have the southerly ORA next to Pacific Coast Highway. In 1973, the Coastal Commission issued an exemption for the oil field, and that exemption was a binding determination recognizing the claim of vested rights submitted by the oil operators to conduct oil production on the oil field on an ongoing basis with a goal of 42 million barrels of production. Surface and subsurface oil drilling was to continue with the existing 312 wells with 28 additional wells. This is what was in the exemption. The 28 wells have already addressed, and it's important to note that the coastal development permit in front of you today is designed to replace that exemption to come up with a project which, quite candidly, is more consistent with the Coastal Act than what the exemption was and is currently permitting out there. Now, the Coastal Act's pretty clear. This is a quintessential Coastal Act type of project. 30260 says that coastal-dependent industrial facilities shall be encouraged to locate or expand within existing sites and shall be permitted reasonable long-term growth where consistent with this division. And I'll show you some relevant Coastal Act policies later on in regards to this. This is 1999. This is when my clients, Horizontal Development LLC, took over the operations of the oil field. And staff has already talked about the oil remaining areas, the ORAs. This is the condition of the ORA North today. And they've also described to you the facilities that will be constructed there, the new microturbine enclosure, the oil processing facilities, and the location of the wells. Now, an important consideration is, in fact, the existing drainage channel. Now, you'll note that this drainage channel conveys water from the upper mesa area and takes it straight out to the wetlands located to the west of us. This is not a great way of doing it. And if you see the special conditions that staff has put on the application, we're to incorporate best management practices so we retain and filter all the runoff from the site, which is currently unfiltered. This won't work. So we're going to fill that in. We're going to put in a culvert. And it's important that the commission also note that this is the wetland that we're mitigating. This drainage channel that you're looking right here, there was some pickleweed that grew in there because of the standing water, and we're going to be mitigating that on a 4-to-1 to 8-to-1 basis depending on where we do it. I don't want the commission to have a misimpression that we're proposing development in beautiful, pristine wetlands, because that's not happening. But we are going to mitigate the impacts for addressing this improper drainage channel. These are reflected in special conditions 10 and 11 and 12 of the staff report. Now, in the ORA North, the Sierra Club wrote a letter of opposition talking about the southern tar plant and saying that any of the development located close to the tar plant in that northwesterly corner of the ORA should be eliminated. Now, staff showed you pictures. We were kind of surprised to find it there because it is intensely disturbed with existing development. But in reflection and reaction to those objections and in consultation with the Coastal Commission biologists, the staff has put in special condition number 6, which asks us to modify the project design as a special condition. Well, we're not waiting around on that. This is the original fence wall location here, and we have modified the footprint of that and pulled back the development so that we are meeting the appropriate setback from the tar plant in the northwestern corner of the ORA. In addition, we have special conditions as it pertains to the protection of wetlands. We have buffers, and you'll note here that all the proposed development is consistent with the wetland buffers setbacks as required in the staff report. Additionally, we are going to be constructing a perimeter block wall and a fence. This block wall will be all along the northwesterly and southerly portion of the ORA. This is to protect the surrounding areas should there be some sort of cataclysmic failure of the facility. It's never happened, not in 70 years, but we're going to construct this, and this will make sure that if there is some sort of cataclysmic failure, it can't get off the site. And the perimeter fencing is to mitigate for noise and light. Also, there's a special condition that all the drilling activities and operation activities will be acoustically blanketed, and we will have shielded lighting so there won't be spillover effects for the environment or for our neighbors. Special condition number 3 requires these, including an updated spill management plan, which we will be doing and submitting to the executive director for their review and approval. For protection of archaeology and Esha is also hugely important. This is the original fence line that we had on the northerly and easterly side of the ORA. We have, in consultation with tribes and with your staff, we have modified that fence line to pull it back to address specific concerns. Additionally, we are accepting special condition number 3, which is an expansion of the very significant archaeological special condition that was already placed on there, that we will go out proactively and we will do a survey with the tribes to make sure that we're not having any impacts on it. We didn't think it was an issue because the site is so intensely disturbed already, but it's the right thing to do, and we're in complete concurrence with that special condition. Accordingly, the Tongan Tribal Nation has withdrawn their objections to the application and is now supportive of the same. The perimeter barrier that you see here is what we'll be putting around the remainder of the property, again, not only to keep people from getting into the facility, but it will be slatted so that you don't get these light spillover effects. The one that was a little painful for us was the ORA Esha, ORA North, the 100-foot Esha buffer, which you can see delineated here. These are the areas that we were talking about that staff is calling Esha. We were somewhat surprised in regards to this. With that being said, we have, in fact, redesigned our project and pulled it back, so we are meeting the full 100-foot Esha buffer for the area along the easterly side. Let's move on. So the joint use area has already been described somewhat. This is an existing road that's been there for 70 years. It's important to note it's kept in a clean condition. It's also important to note that another reason we chose this is because this is an intensely used road, not just for us, but it's also the main sewer pipeline for the pumping station, which is located on the ORA South, which you can see located right there. So they have an easement up that road as well with a sewer main for that entire westerly portion of Newport Beach. In this area, we have existing wells, a number of them, as does the city of Newport Beach. The Coastal Commission designated Esha in this area. They've delineated a buffer. We already have 5 wells within that buffer area. So again, we swallowed hard, but we've accepted this special condition. Here's the buffer area, as you can see right there. This is what we originally proposed. We are reconfiguring the wells so that we are, in fact, going to comply with that setback as well. Sea level rise was an issue that was raised by, I believe, also the Sierra Club and also some concerned neighbors. We have looked into this. We want to point out that this fairly simplistic mapping that was submitted to the Coastal Commission did not convey to you that NOAA considers that mapping to be extremely low confidence. It does not take anything sophisticated in regards to the connectivity, the hydrology into account. And in fact, there's not an issue there. To the west of us is the Santa Ana River. The Army Corps of Engineers has built significant levees up to 12 feet high and floodgates on the westerly side. Here's some pictures, impressive, the way Army Corps engineer projects are. Looking north from Pacific Coast Highway, and you'll see that there are flood control gates on the inland channel and check valve hatches from the Santa Ana River. This means that even should sea level rise occur in the worst case scenario, the ORAs will not be inundated. Additionally, these flood gates are designed to keep the flood waters back behind in the wetland areas at no higher than 3 to 3.5 feet mean sea level, so the ORAs will not be inundated. Additionally, to the south, we have Pacific Coast Highway. I don't know, $500 million, $1 billion worth of housing communities. The folks at Caltrans built the berm for Pacific Coast Highway to 16 to 18 feet. At the lowest point, it's 5 to 7 feet above mean sea level. In both of these pictures, you can see the ORA to the north and then the ORA to the south. And then to the east of us, we have significant bluffs, 30, 35 feet tall. There's the ORA north, ORA south, and you get another picture of the bluffs there. And so essentially, courtesy of the Army Corps of the Engineers to the west, Caltrans to the south, and God and Mother Nature to the east, we're high and dry. We are consistent with the statewide interpretive guidelines adopted by this commission as it pertains to sea level rise. By the way, I think Caltrans and the Army Corps engineer may not concur with the order that I put their benefits to the general area. presentation. So I will stop there. How much time, Chair, did I burn up there? Well, if I can keep the remainder of that with the 5 minutes for rebuttal, is that acceptable to you? Then I may have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Then I'll use some of the time that I have right now to just go on to say that there's 23 special conditions in here. They are very, very comprehensive. That this type of project, an oil consolidation project, is exactly what was envisioned by the legislature when they drafted the Coastal Act. We are taking a sprawling, large footprint oil development facility that is 70 years old and predates the Coastal Act and this commission by a protracted period of time, and we're consolidating it down into a very small footprint, which is already intensely developed. And the intensely developed area does not have best management practices. It does not adequately control the runoff from the site. Everything that will be done there will be state-of-the-art in regards to shielding it acoustically and shielding it for light. And as you saw in my presentation, a great deal of the existing development does not meet the setbacks from the surrounding environmental resources that this commission wishes to see in this area and has historically required. By the issuance of this coastal development permit, all future development will, in fact, accommodate those setbacks. So with that, I will wrap up. I'm available for any questions that you may have, and I do appreciate both you and your staff's time.
Thank you. We will now open this matter for public comment. The first speaker card that I have is John Tommy Rosas, followed by Terry Welsh, and followed by Cindy Black. And each speaker will have 2 minutes to speak, unless you have donated time, in which we will expand that time slightly.
Thank you. John Tommy Rosas with Hatton. And I'd like to thank Cassidy and the executive staff for all the good work they did on the condition amendments, including with Mr. Don Schmitz and HDL. We were able to work in agreement to perform and help the compliance with the conditions that we agree with 100%. I think you have a hard copy of my letter, so I just want to hit a couple of points. It's only got 2 minutes. So we officially withdrew all our objections and opposition. Number three, we will be out there consulting and monitoring so that there can be compliance and be part of the planning process to do the testing and surveying with them, as we normally do. And that will be in compliance with the Army Corps requirements that they'll have under the Section 106 of the NHPA. We support the addendum and the conditions as amended in the last addendum. Request that you vote and approve the CDP as it stands at conditioned. We also, number six, we support the CDP approval for the termination and settlement of litigation currently stayed, which is part of the CD, part of this project anyway. And I think it's an equitable way to sort out the issues, and it's a viable conclusion of litigation. So that's about it. If you have, I wanted to say one thing too. This is well within our territory. The line is Aliso Creek, so we have consulted with the Juaninos and some of the other Otterman folks, but just to be on the record that this is well within all the historic maps of our territory. And then mine's tied in with the DNA as well, so I mean, how many thousand years you want to go back? So anyway, thank you very much for hearing me, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll next have Terry Welsh and Cindy Black following him.
Chair, it was my understanding we had 3 minutes. I can do mine in 2.5 minutes. Cindy will give me her time, so that should be enough.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. My name is Terry Welsh, and I am chairperson of the Sierra Club Banning Ranch Park and Preserve Task Force, and it is always an honor to speak before this commission. Today I'm going to talk about a plant that's really rare and is found in only in a few places, and that plant, of course, is the southern tar plant, and you heard about it from your staff, and you heard about it from your from the applicant. Now I'd like to tell you about it from the Sierra Club. Southern tar plant is a small herb-like plant. It has a small yellow flower, and it grows next to coastal wetlands and areas that are disturbed by periodic flooding. Now, when I say it's rare, it's really rare, and it's classified as seriously endangered in California. And when I say that it's found in only a few places, it's only found in a few places, and one of those is Banning Ranch, and specifically on the lowland wetlands of Banning Ranch. And there are two areas of southern tar plant located on that northwestern corner of the proposed oil remainder area north, or ORA North, and your staff has appropriately designated these as ESHA. And as you know, under 30240 of the Coastal Act, ESHA not only has to be spared from development, but there has to be an adequate buffer. Now, your staff has traditionally recommended 50-foot buffers for Southern Tar Plant ESHA. For example, this is the Bolsa Chica Hearthside Homes project, which was approved and had 50-foot Southern Tar Plant ESHA buffers. Now, the project before you today, though, your staff has recommended, and it's not entirely clear why, a 25-foot buffer. And it's... We understand that there are some instances where you need to make a smaller buffer when there's just no other way it can work. But in this case, the ESHA is right at the corner of the project, and it's not clear to us why you can't just pull back another 25 feet. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next, we will have Terrell Koken, Jay Humphrey, followed by Elizabeth Cameron, each of whom will have 2 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
Commissioners, any friend of Terry Koken's is a friend of mine. We have here an application to drill 62 oil wells slantwise through bedrock into porous oil shale. This will happen, if approved, on turf that is essentially part of Costa Mesa, namely Banning Ranch, even though Newport Beach claims sovereignty over it. This will happen, if approved, in a seismic fault zone, one that led to a major quake in Costa Mesa in the 1930s. This will happen, if approved, above Costa Mesa's ancient colored water aquifer, putting the aquifer at risk for contamination by salt water, putting the aquifer at risk for contamination by stray petroleum products, and putting the aquifer at risk for contamination from chemistry and pollution from any hydraulic fracturing that takes place. Mr. Aranga, I am still jealous of your mustache, sir.
Thank you. Oops. Thank you. We'll now have Mr. Jay Humphrey, followed by Elizabeth Cameron.
I'm donating my time to Steve Ray.
Okay, thank you. Miss Elizabeth Cameron. Next, we have Blossom Hathaway and Mel Kong. Is Miss Cameron here? Thank you.
Kia ora. My name is Elizabeth Cameron, and I'm here today to request that the commission permanently stop oil drilling and construction at Banning Ranch. I'm also asking you to permanently protect this site. I'm also going to submit comments on behalf of Dr. Charles Sepulveda, a professor at Cal Poly Pomona and a descendant of the Juaneño and Gabrieleño. He would like to provide comments on Banning Ranch as on his perspective as a native scholar. The land under dispute, known alternatively as Banning Ranch, or the village of Ginga, is an archaeological and culturally significant site for the Juaneño and the Gabrieleño. According to archaeologists, native populations lived here for several thousand years, up until the 19th century when they were displaced by the mission system. An ancestor who lived here was named Lorenzo. Her name is amongst those in San Juan Capistrano's baptismal records. She was 70 when she was baptized on August 10th, 1820. The priest who baptized her was Geronimo Bocasana, the famous author of the book Chaning Chanich, detailing Gabrieleño and Juaneño culture and creation stories. However, Banning Ranch is much more than just an archaeological site. It is also beyond just being a unique environment. It continues to be sacred Indian land, notwithstanding several archaeological sites having already been disturbed. Place remains sacred for indigenous people, despite what has taken place in time. Our lands, including Banning Ranch, have been desecrated for development and what scholars have named settler colonialism, the displacement and replacement of native peoples by settlers. Settler colonialism is a structure in which native peoples have to continuously struggle to protect lands and sacred sites from destruction in order to discontinue the historical processes of indigenous displacement. I strongly urge the Coastal Commission to deny the proposed development permit in its current form. Furthermore, I strongly and respectfully request that an open space area at minimum be required to be co-managed with Native nations that have clear and direct historical and cultural ties to this property. Additionally, Native nations should be recipients of at least half of the funds proposed to be set aside to manage the open space area. This would ensure the protection of our archaeological, cultural, and ethnographic resources in perpetuity. How am I doing on time?
You're out of time.
I'm
out of time unless someone else is willing to cede you time.
No, I'm good.
For 2 minutes? Okay, Susan Jordan has ceded you time, so you may have 2 more minutes.
Thank you. Let's see for later. Native peoples have been unable to be stewards of their own lands in Orange County because of the genocidal colonialism they experienced. Banning Ranch can provide opportunity for Native peoples to reconnect with our lands and can provide us the ability to continue teaching our children the sacredness of place. Where else are we going to have the opportunity to become stewards of coastal lands in Orange County if not here? Should we continue the colonial project of land development and dispossession? Or can we collectively attempt to move beyond the colonial era and make a small effort at amending the wrongs of the past? Should we not take advantage of the current moment to move beyond genocidal logics that place Indians in the distant past and not as living peoples, as Native nations who continue to value the sacredness of their lands and waters? Please protect Native lands and allow Native peoples to be partners in your conservation efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will have Blossom Hathaway and Mel Kong. And if you could start making your way up to the front as I call your name so that we can maximize our time, that would be very helpful. I'd also like to instruct the members of the public as you're speaking. There is a yellow light by the screen that indicates that you have a few seconds left, and so that should be helpful in telling you about your time. Thank you, and if you could please state your name for the record.
Mia Hui, my name is Blossom Hathaway. I stand here before you with my children, and just thank you for your time and allowing me to voice my opinion in this matter. We come from Riverside, California, I'm a member of the Kuya tribe and also Chiricahua Apache tribe. Our land here is very sacred to us. I have a connection with the Channel Islands here. I had a ceremony when I was a teenager on those islands, and the land is just very important to us. We are protectors of the land. It's our job to speak for the land. And I'm not asking you, I'm begging you, please, please protect this land. At this time where we are in this world and the things that are going on in the world, we need this time to protect lands and to give lands back, not to take them and give them to oil companies that want to destroy the land and take away flowers and animals and bugs and all these species that don't have a voice. So that's why I'm here. I have to be heard and just voice that please take your responsibility to do what you can do to protect the land. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will have Mel Kong, followed by Steve Ray, and after that, Arliss Reynolds.
Good morning.
The CEOs of these oil companies.
Sorry, could you please state your name?
Mel Kong.
Thank you.
The CEOs of these companies must be kicking themselves. They probably bought these leases when oil was $100 plus a barrel. And now, with oil at $50 a barrel, they can't even break even. With all their capital expenditures, they're going to need at least $100 plus a barrel to make a profit. So what is this really? They call it scorched earth in the military. And if you approve this project, there will be no fairy shrimp, not a fairy shrimp, or a burrowing owl left on the property. Now, first off, they're already breaking the law. Their road runs right through the eshell. Now, you can't be a little bit pregnant. So you're either obeying the law or not obeying the law. Next, these oil fields are almost 50 years old. All the easy-to-get oil is gone. So they're going to have to frack these wells in order to get the rest of the oil. And who's going to pay the price for all our destroyed water wells and our increased earthquakes? Oklahoma has become a hotbed for earthquakes because of the fracking done there. How are we going to put the genie back in the bottle? And thirdly, who's going to take care of the oil spills? You know, Enbridge Energy, the builder of the Dakota Access Pipeline, has an average of one spill every 5 days. One every 5 days. That's almost a week. Okay. So who's going to pay for it? The taxpayers. We are. Because you're going to have to go after these guys for the money, and they're going to say, life sucks for you, California. We're going bankrupt.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we'll have Steve Ray, followed by Arliss Reynolds, and then Francisco Alvarado. And if those who are going to be speaking could make their way up to the front now. I see Steve Ray indicating something. You know, I will move you down a little bit on the line. Next person will be Arliss Reynolds, please, followed by Francisco Alvarado and Brad Pierce. If you all could come to the front so we can be ready and move the public comment along, that would be great. Thank you. And if you could please state your name for the record, and remember that when the yellow light comes on, that's an indication that your time is almost concluded. Thank you very much.
Okay, my name is Arliss Reynolds. I'm from Costa Mesa. Kind of a roller coaster this morning. I wasn't planning to speak, then I thought I had 3 minutes. I guess I only have two, so I'm going to go really fast. I want to make 2 points today. First, it's really hard to participate in this process. I'm new to this process. I'm learning about the Coastal Commission. I've been out in the community trying to teach about the Coastal Commission. It's hard to participate in this process. We're 90 miles from Banning Ranch. It's a Friday. It's a work day. There's a lot of people who can't be here today, and that's a big part of the reason I took off work to be here, to represent people who couldn't come. You guys know there's a lot of material to go through. There's a lot of reading to do, and it requires a lot of expertise to understand that. So please take very seriously all of the people who made the trip to be here. It's not easy. The applicant said, you know, it's a little painful to make some of the changes that they did. It's a little painful for us to be here. It hits people's wallets to be here when we're from the public. Second, another thing that I've heard in the meetings that I've been coming to regarding Coastal Commission and Banning Ranch is the perception that the community supporting protecting Banning Ranch is this wealthy, you know, community of rich people with nothing better to do than to, you know, try to protect the environment. Those are important things to think about, but we're not all a bunch of rich people. I'm here representing students, teachers, restaurant workers. We're We're a new generation that's seen our park space disappear. We're hearing from the world's leading scientists that we're going to see great environmental disaster in our lifetime. This is really serious for us. We're just trying to do what we can to save the environment. Please take very seriously your job, the mission of the commission here, protect and enhance the coast and ocean for present and future generations.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Francisco Alvarado is next, and you'll have 2 minutes, and if Brad Pierce and Matthew Forth could come to the front and be ready to testify. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Francisco Alvarado, and I'm here to speak about Banning Ranch in Orange County and the permit CDP number 9-15-1649. This permit requests 77 to 82 new oil wells on a 400-acre piece of native California wetlands, much of which the Coastal Commission has already dubbed, you know, ESHA. And because of that fact, we've already seen a lot of projects, proposals, plans, and operations denied or rejected because, you know, the development neglects the Coastal Commission's responsibility to protect the ESHA. This proposed permit is no different than its predecessors, you know, because Banning Ranch is still ESHA. Banning Ranch is still the last unprotected coastal wetland. Banning Ranch is still a sensitive area that needs our protection. And so I want to tell you guys that we're out here to protect this land, and I want you to be on the right side of history here. I want you guys to make the right decision and deny this project, because there is no way that 82 new oil wells on this land can serve anybody but big money. And don't let big money beat people power, because the Coastal Act was put up by the people of the state of California to protect these areas. And we don't want this project here. We don't want oil wells in our coastal communities. And these are ancient sacred lands to the people who originally lived here. I just want to, in closing, tell you guys that you all have a sacred duty here as commissioners of the Coastal Commission. Do the right thing. Protect these lands, not just for me, but for the future generations. We love our beautiful areas in Orange County. We've seen it time and time again be bought out by big money. Don't let that continue to happen to us.
Thank you. We'll next have Brad Pierce, followed by Matthew Forth, followed by Ashley Dos Santos. And so if those folks could come forward just so we're ready, I would appreciate it. Thank you. And Mr. Forth?
I am Brad Pierce.
Brad Pierce. Oh, Mr. Pierce, you have ceded time. You will have 8 minutes total.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the commission. My name is Brad Pierce, and I've been asked by the Banning Ranch Conservancy to testify on horizontal development's application. I have spent over 43 years in the oil and gas industry. I have a variety of field engineering and management positions. I have a master's degree in petroleum engineering from the University of Southern California, and I'm a registered engineer in the state of Texas. I would like to say that I am an oil and gas advocate at this point. I have reviewed the permit application and the supplemental information that has been made available to me up to this morning. When it comes to the subsurface operations of this project, it appears to me to be vague and lacks details that I believe are necessary to make a determination on the concerns that the Banning Ranch Conservancy has. I believe the plan is prepared in general and vague and makes it difficult to evaluate the potential risks to the environment. I want to comment that steam is a useful tool in developing oil and gas reserves, but the proposed steaming plan can potentially be damaging and possibly dangerous if implemented without attention to detail. The information provided is lacking in detail, and it is difficult to determine what the potential damage to the environment workers, or maybe even nearby residents may be. The application is incomplete, and approval should be withheld until additional information is provided. Some of the concerns and questions that we have are as follows. Concerning the new drilling operations, the proposed development, the proposed drilling program in the application that I reviewed is at a minimum, it is very vague, and at a minimum, generic wellbore diagrams of the potential horizontal wells would need to be completed, need to be included in the application. The information that should be prepared would include such information as casing setting depths, casing cementing volumes, intervals of interest, kickoff points, true vertical depths, and measured depths, and these are all critical items that should be included. Is there an electric log available that can be evaluated for the possible steaming boundaries? In relationship to the steaming simulation portion, there's concern of surface expressions may occur when steam migrates from the injection well to the wells that are old, damaged, or unstable. These wells can be conduits for the steam to come to the surface. Examples of surface expressions are surface collapse or possibly sinkholes, forceful ejection of scalding water, rocks, or debris to the surface and into the air. It would be useful to evaluate to the evaluation process to know what specific operating parameters of the previous steam injection project were problems encountered that could impact the area. Is the proposed steam injection operation going to have higher injection pressures and volumes than the previous operations? Is the plan to inject steam above the fracture gradient, formation fracture gradient? And the formation fracture gradient is a measure at a point at which the fracture is created in the rock formation or the interval of interest. Will near surface monitoring for high temperatures be implemented to ensure that the surface and the workers and nearby residents are protected from steam or unusually high temperatures? This data may already exist based on the current steaming operations. And it'd be nice to be able to see it if it did. Based on the application, it is indicated that reserve osmosis equipment will be used in the process. The assumption is that the equipment will be used to clean up produced water for the steaming process. The experience indicates that there are contaminants filtered out that will be gathered and transported as a waste to a licensed disposal facility. Other concerns that are available, there are numerous abandoned and active wells operated by third parties in the vicinity. How is the steam injection operation going to impact those wells and those operations? What about nearby fault lines and potential seismicity? It is recommended to perform a study to better understand how and whether proposed steam injection volumes and pressures will impact the seismic activity. This is a concern given to the proximity of the Inglewood and Newport and Inglewood faults that are located nearby. Truck trips to haul oil increase from 1 per day to 4 per day, an incremental increase of three truck loads a day per day. Will there be an impact to the surrounding traffic and possibly air quality? Some of the missing information necessary to complete the application would be to prepare a detailed development plan as part of the application process. The development plan would include answers to the questions that have been raised, in addition to some of the following: a schedule regarding the proposed timing of wells to be drilled, initiation of steam injection, start and completion dates for the facility upgrades, possibly in the form of a Gantt chart, a map illustrating the approximate directional well bottom hole locations, geological evaluation, provide electric log information and cross sections to indicate the zones where oil production occurs, where steam will be injected, where excess produced water will be injected that is not converted to steam. The geological evaluation would provide some idea of the possibility of surface expressions occurring or not. If drilling new wells is to be conducted under environmentally sensitive areas, then what measures will be taken to prevent surface expressions? What measures are to be taken if a surface expression does occur? And then finally, provide a specific steam injection operations plan. This is certainly not a complete list of questions that need to be answered, but certainly a start to give all the parties some comfort level of the project. Thank you for your consideration. I am available for questions, and I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll next have Matthew Forth, followed by Ashley Dos Santos, followed by Kevin Nelson. Mr. Forth, you have ceded time. You will have 5 minutes.
Thank you. Okay. Honorable commissioners, I first of all want to thank you for allowing public comments. It's appreciated. My name is Matthew Forth, and I do represent Greenpeace out of Orange County. We find ourselves yet again in a quarrel determining the future of Banning Ranch. Instead of a development, we see a proposal of building an additional 62 new oil wells. Conveniently for the oil companies involved, Shell and ExxonMobil, under the guise of Era Energy as a subsidiary, this is a tactic commonly used by them in order to prolong the cleanup of the mess left behind from their previous actions. Let us take, for example, let us look at Shell, for example. A study from the Alaska Wilderness League sums up Shell's operations around the world as a company who operates with a brazen disregard for the safety of its own workers, the needs of local communities both here in the United States and internationally, and the long-term impact of drilling on the environment. Instead of taking responsibility for its actions, Shell simply pays fines and settles lawsuits. The report also adds that it seems that Shell considers lawsuits and cleanup costs just a part of doing business, consequences to be paid while avoiding substantive changes to its operations that might interfere with the company's efforts to maximize its already immense profits. Is this the type of company we want taking advantage of the last unprotected open space in Southern California? I can safely speak for many of the community here that they do not. Who also really benefits from the expansion of oil wells on this property? It is certainly not the people of California. The majority of the oil produced will likely be sent to the highest bidder, which will end up in most cases a foreign country, thus benefiting our local economy here very little. And with this addition, oil companies seek to profit and continue their grip really on society and profit greatly at the expense of this, for example, our local environment. Let us also not forget the agreement made between 177 countries during the COP21 Paris Agreement. It is now recognized around the world that climate change is undeniable, and we as a society must transition out of fossil fuels. How short-sighted can our vision for the future be for not only our local environment, but the world at large with the adding of these new oil wells? We live in one of the most pivotal moments in our history, as our actions now will determine the fate of all life on this planet. Will you contribute to an already immense problem happening globally with this local addition, or make the right choice for future generations? Once again, we ask that you consider putting people over profit and deny the permit. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll now have Ashley Dos Santos, followed by Kevin Nelson, followed by Guadalupe Vega, and after that, Alfredo Cruz. Thank you. Could you please state your name for the record, and you will have 2 minutes.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for everyone listening to community members that have come here to speak. We appreciate it a lot. I'm a concerned citizen here for the many locals in the Banning Ranch neighborhoods that couldn't make it today because of work and travel constraints. I'm here to not just ask, but beg that the commissioners deny the permit to drill on Banning Ranch and stand up for their mission of protecting our oceans and our coasts. I grew up a block away from the property and spent my life running up and down the riverbed and throughout the surrounding parks with my high school cross-country teams, recreationally and taking my dog for walks. I've also spent endless hours just below the property at the Santa Ana River mouth, at the river jetty, swimming, surfing, and growing up as a local surf lover. I always looked over the fence that divides Banning Ranch from the other preserved natural spaces surrounding it, wondering how the oil drills and their mess affected the ocean. Imagining how amazing it would be if we could conserve the space for future generations and stop developing our coastal space in a way that negatively impacts the beautiful coastline. Now, as a mother-to-be, protecting the coastline from development that opens, protecting our coastline from development that opens the door to destroy our natural habitats becomes even more important. 7 months pregnant with a baby on the way, I'm more motivated to take action to help preserve coastal spaces and work towards conserving them. In my opinion, the commission should deny this permit and stop giving exemptions to oil companies that are contributing to climate change, asking for the bending of rules when it comes to adhering to Coastal Act. Listening to the horizontal development lawyer, I heard the word exemption. I heard it a lot. And as climate change issues become more and more of a dangerous reality, the commission should take a stand and move towards votes that preserve our precious California coast instead of continuing to open it up to dirty oil and polluters. As a concerned citizen, I speak for the local community. The commission should commit to their mission on their website, and I quote, "The commission is committed to protecting and enhancing California's coast and ocean for present and future generations. I see no pictures of oil drills or dirty well waste on your website."
Thank you. Thank you.
Please deny this.
Thank you. Next, we have Kevin Nelson, followed by Guadalupe Vega.
Hello, Commissioners. Kevin Nelson, Nature Commission. My objection to the project, in spite of the great work that your staff has done and continues to do on you know, in regards to Banning Ranch, centers around the fact that if it can happen, however distant the possibility might be, the highest, best use for this land is going to be as habitat and as some kind of nature preserve that serves the entire region down there in Orange County. And I know that's not going to be easy to achieve. There's a lot of legal technicalities and corporate interests involved. But if we can honor the 9-1 vote that commissioners made back in September, and if all the people involved, agencies and the public, can come together to raise enough money over time, and I'd say over time, then we might be able to have ourselves a highly valuable state park, nature preserve, private nature preserve, however that comes to pass. The biggest impediment to that would be allowing development of this land, anything further than what's out there right now, to occur, be it, you know, some other agency's project, such as the sewer line that, you know, there's a lot of different projects that could come through that and have come through that land. This oil project will serve to, I think, the whole intent is to enable the long-term profitable drilling out there. And that has already been, they've already had decades. They've said it themselves. They've had decades and decades of profit from the land. And I think that in their original documents of 42 million barrels that they predicted as their goal, I asked for, could I finish? I had a little speaker slip. I mean, donated time?
We gave you the donated time.
I'm sorry?
I believe. We gave you the donated time.
No, we didn't.
You had two. There's a second one. We'll give you two more minutes.
Okay, that's all I'll need. Thank you.
Okay.
So, you know, the oil company itself has already had a lot of time, a reasonable term, a reasonable usage of that land. And so I think that allowing a whole new raft of wells is counterproductive to that. And it's going to be, that oil facility is incompatible with the real possibility for us to preserve the entire site as some kind of park or nature preserve. So I think that in relation to that, if you saw that you needed to approve this, that it's some kind of sunset provision would be would be reasonable, given that they've already said in their original documents from 1976, that 42 million barrels in 1994 was the goal. I think something like that would serve a lot of purposes if this has to be approved. Finally, I would say that this applicant has been extremely irresponsible in their handling of the land. If you look at 2003, 2007, or 2009 satellite shots, you will see a mesa that was obliterated, not just mowed, obliterated by the applicant. Okay? Every square foot that they could get a tractor into outside of deep arroyos was obliterated, including spots where net catchers were seen in studies. So that is the level of awareness and intent that we've had from this applicant. As good as they've been as a small business, I support them. But what they've done out there has been a con job. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now hear from Guadalupe Vega, followed by Alfredo Cruz, and then a presentation by Steve Ray, and he will have 10 minutes. I'd ask the remaining speakers to come forward or start making their way if they may do so. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Guadalupe Vega, and earlier it was noted that this project may not have will not be affected by sea level rise. However, this project will be a contributor to sea level rise, and this bookmark is from the literature table outside the door, and I would like to read off of it. So when we use fossil fuels, we release carbon dioxide. More carbon dioxide in the air means more carbon dioxide in the ocean, causing ocean acidification, which makes it harder for many animals to survive and thrive, and higher global temperatures causing sea level rise, which threatens coastal habitats for plants, animals, and people. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now have Alfredo Cruz, and followed by Steve Ray. And if Steve Ray can start making his way to the front as well. Mr. Cruz, you have seated time, so you'll have a total of 4 minutes, and Mr. Ray will have a total of 10 with his seated time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Chair Saunders, commissioners, and staff, my name is Alfred Cruz, Jr. This is my brother, Aaron Cruz. I live in the city of Orange, California. Thank you for allowing me to speak. Was it the following words need to be spoken? I acknowledge the Chumash people whose ancestral lands are being used to hold this meeting today. I am of a Hashemite ancestry, the people with ancestral ties to the project area to be impacted. Both my dad, Alfred Cruz Sr., and aunt, Anita Espinosa, were designated most likely descendants, MLDs, with the Guadagno Band of Mission Indians, a Hashemite nation. I'm a member of United Coalition to Protect Banhe, which I am representing today. UCPP did submit a letter, which is in the addendum. I am also a board member of the California Cultural Resources Preservation Alliance. I last spoke to you at the September 2016 meeting concerning the Banning Ranch project. Now it's concerning Banning Ranch oil field. Same area, different name. All 401 acres of Banning Ranch oil field are actually within the ancestral village of Henga, which is a traditional cultural landscape listed on the Native American Heritage Commission's Sacred Site Land Inventory. This is a sacred site. This is ancestral homeland to both the Tungva and the Hashemite people. As a traditional cultural landscape, the entire site holds spiritual and cultural values which are significant to us, the Hashemite people. Our sacred sites, traditional cultural landscapes along the coast are under threat. I was at Panhe by San Clemente, one of our sacred sites, last Saturday, now under threat of nuclear waste from the Santa Ofre nuclear plant. I was at Bolsa Chica and Huntington Beach last Saturday, an international cogstone site where ancestral graves were desecrated. On occasion, my brother and I bike from Orange to Benny Ranch oil field, following the path of the Santa Ana River to the sacred site of Henga, which is fenced and be held hostage by the dollar. To close, we, United Coalition to Protect Pauna, do not approve of the destructive practice of salvage recovery and relocation archaeology, which are stipulated possibilities under Addendum Condition 23. The only acceptable mitigation measures to us are avoidance and preservation in situ. Being aware of the litigation that your decision will trigger, we oppose the issuing of a permit which would allow the addition of new wells on this traditional cultural landscape sacred site. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we will have Steve Ray. He will have 10 minutes to make his presentation with seated time.
Madam Chair, I thought I would have 12. I had six slips.
You did have several slips. We can give you 12 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, Commissioners, I'm Steve Ray, Executive Director of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. First of all, Madam Chair, I want to thank you very much for consideration allowing me to go a little later. I was having a little pain when you called me, and I needed to kind of work through that. I'll get through this, but I'll be okay. So I'll soldier on, as they say. I want to make clear what the position of the Banning Ranch Conservancy is in this matter. As you know, we, of course, oppose any development on Banning Ranch. We wish to preserve it, acquire it, conserve it, and manage it permanently as public open space, park, and coastal nature preserve. This, however, is a different animal, the oil consolidation operations. We acknowledge that the mineral rights owner on the site, Horizontal Development LLC, has the right to extract their oil and to do so going forward. We also acknowledge that they have an exemption permit from 1973, which gave them the right to continue the operations that were in existence at that time. And a lot of those have gone away now, but some of them are still extant on site. So we acknowledge that. But we do take issue with this particular application. We have quite a few issues with it, and I'm going to try to, with the limited time, to try to speed through some of these as much as I can. We were expecting 3 minutes per person, so I prepared for a little bit more time. First of all, I want to correct some misstatements that have been going on out there. First of all, on the number of wells that are affected by this operation, I have here two ex parte forms, one from Commissioner Kinsey and one from Commissioner Cox, regarding meetings they had with the with Mr. Schmitz, who is the representative for the applicant. And in one of them, Mr. Cox, as he said, Mr. Schmitz, quote, noted, his client's project consisted of consolidating the oil production facilities currently spread out over the Banning Ranch property. And then Mr. Kinsey says, quote, Mr. Schmitz described the purpose of the project, which is to consolidate hundreds of wells on the property into an 11-acre central location. Well, we take issue with that. The correct statement is that this consolidation only applies to those wells owned by the applicant, which will result in, these are the wells, I have a little diagram here, all those red dots are the wells that are currently on site out there. 44 of them will wind up in the consolidation zones. That's all. 67 of them will remain. So it's not cleaning up all of them. It's not moving all of them. The others are owned by other owners, like the developers. Those are not going to be moved at all. They're going to remain. So we're just talking about 44 wells here moving on to that site. So I want to clarify that. Also, there has been a question about the kind of steam injection operations that are going to be ongoing on the site. We acknowledge that we understand that they have been doing steam injection out there for decades, but it has been in the form of the regular old-type steam injection, which is called steam flooding, water flooding, fire flooding, and those have been going on. Our information is that this new process that they're proposing, the CSS as it's called, the cyclic steam stimulation, would actually be a new process on site. And there is very little disclosure, as Mr. Pierce, the oil field expert, testified earlier in his 43 years of knowledge in the field. And there's very little information about how that's going to work. Our concern about that is that this, as Mr. Pierce explained, causes what's called surface expressions, a nice term for what are called sinkholes and geysers. Otherwise, nature going crazy out there. And those sinkholes and geysers will occur throughout the ESHA that is on site, therefore disturbing the ESHA. There needs to be a clear disclosure of exactly what methods they're going to use, what the potential impacts of those are, how it's going to affect the environment. That is not here. Okay, so a couple of misstatements I want to correct. Now, what I will propose, first of all, is that this item be moved back a couple of months to February. It'll be local, first of all, which will make it nice. But second of all, that'll stay within the 90 days extension deadline. And I hope that the owners would agree to such an extension. But that will give everybody a chance to get all of the correct information that's necessary to evaluate this. And we would also offer in that time, we have asked for years to meet with the oil company operators to discuss the ongoing oil field operations out there. They have consistently refused our entreaties. But I make that offer again. We would love to sit down and work with them to try to work this out. We do not oppose, philosophically, the consolidation of the oil operations. Let me make that clear. We do not oppose that. We, however, oppose a plan that is full of gaps, full of misinformation, and needs some problems fixed. We would be happy to sit down with them to work through those and come up with a plan that will satisfy the environmental concerns on site, satisfy the cultural resource concerns on site, and provide the applicant an opportunity to maximize their production capability out there. We understand they have that legal right. We're not questioning that, but we do question how they're going to do it. Now, a couple of things I've mentioned in there also, that they're going to clean up this site. Well, I would submit this site has been messed up by them for decades. They've had an opportunity for decades to clean that up out there. We shouldn't just go do this because now it's a chance to clean it up. This is something they should be doing anyway. Another thing, I understand there's litigation going on here, and you wish to resolve that litigation. I understand that totally. But I would suggest that you do not want to unnecessarily agree to a settlement, to settle one litigation that will possibly lead to additional litigation. That doesn't make sense either. So I think a delay will help resolve that possibility and resolve those issues, and we'll get rid of any and all litigation, current or future, by doing so. Question two about the buffers that are going on out there. We hear 25 feet for the Southern Tar plant. We hear 50 to 70 feet for Cajun, which we both totally disagree with as totally inadequate. They're not consistent with the way the law has been applied in all other such similarly situated cases, including those nearby like at Bolsa Chica. And then I heard Mr. Schmitz, when he was talking, saying they're going to agree to 100-foot buffers. I'm thoroughly confused now with what the buffers are going to be for the ESHA and for the wetlands. Was Mr. Schmitz only talking about in a couple of areas? Was he talking about everywhere? Are all of the Cajun areas, all of the wetlands areas, are all of the Southern Tar Plant areas going to have a 100-foot buffer? If that's it, that's great. We love that. If that's not the case, then let's clarify exactly what is being proposed. Talking about dangers out there that Mr. Pierce addressed, That area is rife with fault zones. As a matter of fact, there is a fault line that is 3 feet away from the north area. 3 feet. Now, that isn't just like a little line in the crack in the rock. That's like a spider web. It just fractures out all over the site. And that those fractures certainly go under the oil remainder area. So any of the operations that are going to be conducting out there have the potential impact of disrupting that fault zone. So we think that that is an area the seismicity and geological effects need further study. As far as protecting the site from sea level rise and flooding and things like that, well, we have documentation that we've submitted that show that site has been flooded 1983, 1988, 2003, from rain it's flooded. And when you have that right beside the protected Army Corps of Engineers Seminyak Slough wetlands area, and then the gates, tidal gates that go right out into the river and into the ocean, you're talking about if it floods again, like it has, that oil operations could cause a lot of contamination to go into the protected wetlands and hence out into the river through the tidal gates and into the ocean as well. So there's a possibility of contamination there. We would also ask that if, I know staff has put in these conditions, and we appreciate all the hard work staff has done. This is a very complicated thing, I understand that. And we've talked with staff, and we certainly get great ears from the staff. They don't always agree and do what we suggest, but we do appreciate their cooperation. That they've put in a lot of these conditions that a lot of this stuff coming down the road later, a lot of information will be gathered later. Other permits are going to be coming later that are going to change conditions, and that all of that come back to the staff for review and approval by the executive director. We would ask, and this is not illegal at all, it's not common, but we're asking that you allow a public review period for any of this information that comes back to the commission staff, that there be a 90-day public review period so that we can comment on it, because we take serious issue with a lot of this stuff. There's just so much information that is totally lacking. I mean, it's stupefying almost how much information is lacking in this case. So we would ask for the opportunity, since we don't have the opportunity to publicly review it now, since it's never been submitted or required, we would ask for the chance to review it then and to issue our concerns about it then and work with staff and hopefully the applicant to work those out. And I know that Mr. Peterson said that there would be no CEQA review relied on by other agencies as a result of this agency's review. Was that correct? I just want to understand, make sure I understood that. If that is correct, we're concerned about how the other agencies are going to approach it and everything, and there may be significant changes coming back later, and that's why we also asked for this public review. I have many other things, but I'm short on time. I will be available for questions, and I would stress that Mr. Pierce, a real expert in this field for 43 years, is available for questions also. With that, thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll now have the applicant's representative, Mr. Don Schmitz. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Before you start, there we go. For the record, Don Schmitz, that was a lot, and I'll try to cover it. First and foremost, the Induced Seismicity Consortium of the University of Southern California has looked into this at very great length, commissioners, and they have found that injection wells used by the oil industry in California are different from the injection disposal wells linked to earthquakes in other states like Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, and Arkansas. Injection wells used by the oil industry is just different here. It has a different purpose, and in fact, there has been no documented cases in California where injuries or property damage have been caused by induced seismicity. We have also submitted for the record a letter from Mr. Donald Clark, who literally wrote the book for the Los Angeles Basin in regards to this issue. He has 60 published abstracts and papers of Los Angeles Basin geology and computer mapping techniques for induced seismicity, and 3 geologic guidebooks on the geology and oil development of the Los Angeles Basin. And he said that, in fact, that the low pressure reinjection in the steam wells that will occur here, and it is not fracking, will not create any seismic issues for the area, and it hasn't for 70 years. So in addition, the staff has talked about abandonment and consolidation. These are the three wells that my clients, who are not Era Energy, are not Cherokee, and they are not Shell. It is a small, privately owned oil company. They will be abandoning these wells, commissioners, and they will be consolidating their facilities down in the two ORAs, ORA North, and you can see the upland area there. And I want to show you the habitat classifications that this commission adopted when they denied the Banning Ranch project. Yes, we're consolidating down into the two ORAs. You determined that virtually almost all the rest of the upland areas and the remainder of the property is environmentally sensitive habitat area. But when you adopted the habitat classifications, the ORA North, rightfully so, you said there's no habitat value there. And you did the same thing for the ORA South. You said that there's no habitat value there. Of course that's the place that we should be consolidating the future oil operations. Well, I want to go back and I want you to take a good look at that. You can see these are the oil remainder areas right there. They're just big gray blobs. There's nothing there in regards to habitat. We're going to fix the runoff. And we're not asking for a pass in regards to past practices, because everything that happened was done according to the law and with the full understanding of the Coastal Commission and Dogger. But this coastal development permit will mean a much tighter ship in regards to runoff from the site. It will, in fact, we're revising the fence location, and what the testimony didn't tell you is there's places where the tar plant wasn't considered SHM was allowed to be removed by this commission. In this particular case, the Coastal Commission biologist who was sitting here determined that the 25-foot setback was appropriate because the tar plant that grew there grew around existing facilities, which we're going to pull out and we're going to enhance the habitat in that area. We are, in fact, going to have oil containment wall around the entire property and an appropriate perimeter fencing, which doesn't exist right now. We have modified the fence line. And I'm sorry, commissioners, but I do not think that my clients should be pilloried for neo-colonial genocide or for global warming. They have an oil consolidation application, which is the quintessential Coastal Act. And we've approached this very respectfully, and we've designed it accordingly. And we now have the support of the Tongan Tribal Nation in regards to this. And we've accepted an expanded special condition to make sure that we are, in fact, sensitive and will not impact any sites, any sacred sites, any sites whatsoever. We are agreeing to all the ESHA buffers in the northerly ORA and the southerly ORA. Sea level rise is not an issue. Flooding is not an issue. The Coastal Act is what this hearing is about, commissioners. 30262 of the Coastal Act specifies that oil and gas development shall be permitted in accordance with Section 30260. So that's what I showed you before, if the following conditions are met. The development is performed safely and consistent with the geologic conditions of the well site, and there's voluminous information that it will be. We've got 50 years of steam injection. We're not going to hurt anything, and your geologist has looked at it. And it goes on to say that new or expanded facilities related to the development are consolidated to the maximum extent feasible and legally permissible. And commissioners, that is exactly what we are doing. We are abandoning our rights outside in the remaining areas, and we are consolidating all the future oil production within those areas. I thank you for your time, and I'm available.
Thank you.
If you have any questions.
I would like to now turn it over to the staff for their response.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. A few things that I'll comment on and then pass it on to my colleagues. I want to respond to a number of things that Brad Pierce brought up on behalf of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. He made some observations that some of the materials in our application, in the application to us on this matter, were vague and not detailed enough. He mentioned a number of technical items wanting a more detailed drilling program, identification of casing setting depths, understanding injection pressures, bottom hole locations, a schedule of timing of well drilling, and identification of zones of development, items such as that that we believe fall within the purview of DOGGR, the Division of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources. And with that, at this point, I think maybe I'll hand this over to Dr. Engel, who would like to make some comments.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Vice Chair Turnbull Sanders and Commissioners. Regarding the reduced gnatcatcher buffers on the south property, for all the reasons that Mr. Teufel presented, which I worked with on him closely, I believe that the few areas of gnatcatcher habitat in the south area that have 50 to 75 foot buffers rather than 100 are still protective to the gnatcatchers. And that is because we carefully considered the type of development that presents a low level of disturbance that involves very little day-to-day activity. And in addition, the gnatcatcher habitat is on top of a 40-foot coastal bluff that is a significant natural barrier between the gnatcatchers and the development. So, and then turning to the southern tar plant, which, as been told to you, is extremely rare, and we are very concerned and committed to committed and required by the Coastal Act to protect it and ensure its persistence. It is an annual, and in the project footprint and surrounding areas, the population boundaries of the plant have been very mercurial, and that is that they pop up every year in different areas of suitable habitat. The only population with a buffer less than 50 feet, and it's on slide 10 if you'd like to see it, is the one in the very northwest corner. This area will be protected from any further development and disturbance by a concrete block wall. And more importantly, in my mind, to the population as a whole, is the tar plant habitat enhancement plan that involves the removal of out-of-service and abandoned equipment, concrete pads, and construction debris that will open up a large and contiguous area of suitable habitat that the tar plant can move into and move around as it is want to do over the years. And I just want to emphasize to you that your staff, including your technical services biologists, take applying adequate buffers very seriously and closely study, consider, and review on a case-by-case basis any situation where we support reduced buffers, and this is one of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ainsworth?
I just wanted to say give thanks to the applicant's representative, both representatives, Leonard Anderson and Don Schmitz, for their collaborative efforts working with staff. This was not an easy project. It was really complex, involved really sticky issues with regard to buffers and setbacks, and I'm really happy that we're able to arrive at a point that we arrived at today in agreement. So with that, I'll conclude staff's comments.
Thank you. Do I have a motion or comments from commissioners? Commissioner Uranga.
Thank you, Vice Chair Turnbull Sanders. Obviously, this is a sticking point for a lot of people in the community, especially when you're talking about Banning Ranch. We've been dealing with Banning Ranch now, and all the time that I've been here as a commissioner. We had a big vote in September regarding the Banning Ranch property as a whole, the whole 401 acres, of which this is part. And we were looking at a development that was rejected and was going to open up actually 90% of the whole Banning Ranch towards preservation, reinstatement of wetlands, the protection of the owl and vernal pools. That would have happened had we had the permit had been accepted back in September, and we probably wouldn't be here today talking about this project here, because the project accepted back in September would have opened up that whole 90%, including these two areas, to mitigation. And because of that, we're now at a point where the property remains locked, remains closed, remains fenced, and remains private. And because of that, the applicants have their right to do what they're trying to do. Now, I commend the applicant, and I commend staff for working together all this long to try to consolidate many of those oil wells. Granted, they're not all of them, but there's a great percentage of them that are going to be consolidated into two areas that are heavily industrialized, that will remove some of those oil wells from the other portions of Banning Ranch, of the Banning Ranch property, that will open them up actually towards more protections of Esha and other fauna and animals in the area. So I see this as a positive movement towards that. We're not quite there yet in terms of where we're going to end up with the whole 401 acres of the Banning Ranch. But I think that consolidating much of the oil wells into these two restricted areas is a step in the right direction, because it basically will help clean up those other areas that are in the outlying areas of the south and northern ORAs, that consolidate those oil wells there. And if I read the report correctly, they will be scheduled for eventual termination or non-usage. So, having said all that, I want to commend staff for working with the applicant, identifying and working with them in terms of what we can do to protect those areas that need protecting, and in the long run, working towards having a very good project in the end that's going to open up Banning Ranch, where it'll open that up for, where we could break down the gates, open the gates, break down the fences, and open it up for public use and public enjoyment. So having said all that, I move that the commission approve Coastal Development Permit 9-15-1649, subject to conditions set forth in the staff recommendations specified below, and I ask for a yes vote.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Uranga?
I think I just did.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey, would you like to speak to your second?
I would. There's some questions that I also have, but I do believe that this is an effort to consolidate and improve the environment that we're talking about here. The conditions like condition number 20, which eliminates future development. There's the wetland enhancements that are going to come that I think are significant. You know, going from a distressed wetland to a high quality wetland. And I think that, you know, in this instance, our biologists have tried to explain to us that they've looked very carefully at these buffers, and they have confidence that they will serve the purposes that they were intended for. I also think it's important to recognize that this will actually capture runoff from a much larger area than the oil recovery area and treat that. So I do think that on balance, this is moving in a positive direction from an environmental perspective. I also think that it's important to notice that, you know, construction like this is all going to be happening outside of the breeding seasons. So every one of these detailed 23 conditions is intended by our staff and our commission, if we adopt this, to make a better situation there, and to realize that we don't have control over the activity itself. So many people asked us to not allow this to continue. We don't have that privilege. So I think it's important to understand we're working within the parameters of what we can achieve on behalf of the planet. A few questions to our staff that I would like to ask. In item number 19 on vegetation management, you talk about them within 36 months, they would
eliminate all vegetation removal activities anywhere on the Banning Ranch. And then it also specifically talks about the 100-foot setback from development. Does that mean that fire protection activities would not be permitted on the site? Has there consideration been given, or do other land surface rights that exist give others the control over that kind of fire protection?
I'm going to bring up Andrew Willis from our enforcement staff, because he was a big part of developing that agreement with the vegetation management through our insurance action.
All right. Let's see. So the agreement that was worked out with the property owners and oil field operator was to continue a limited fuel modification program along the strip, the property line where the property line abuts homes, and that would continue pursuant to the that's an ongoing agreement. As far as what type of fuel modification would be associated with the development that's being proposed here, I would turn that back over to Cassidy.
Okay. So I'm interpreting that that does provide for some fire protection in a limited way for the adjacent development. Is that
that's correct?
Is that correct? Okay. That I think that's important. And then in terms of future development that this particular group has in Condition 20, maybe you could just explain what future development rights they are waiving as a part of this action.
Sim, want to take that?
Yes, Commissioner Kinsey. In 1973, a claim of vested rights was approved by the Commission's predecessor under Prop 20. That claim of exemption provided for up to 340 wells being allowed on the site. Commission staff and the applicant have disagreed about the exact scope of that exemption, but staff does agree that that exemption does apply to some of the activities that are currently occurring on the site. The applicant has argued that it also would allow for new wells anywhere on the site so long as they don't exceed the 340 cap. So under this condition, they would be giving up any rights under that claim of exemption and would simply be relying upon this permit.
Thank you. So it prevents any future drilling outside of these oil recovery areas. Again, I think that's really important for the community to understand that we're working very hard with the applicant to constrain oil development activities on the site. And then if you could talk about the surface owners, and you know, as one of the speakers, Mr. Ray, pointed out, this does not eliminate all activity. This eliminates or consolidates the activity for one of the owners of oil rights. Maybe you could explain, just to make sure that all of us understand, what else could be going on the balance of the property even after we've taken this action.
So yes, you're absolutely right. There, it's a little bit confusing because there are existing oil wells on the property that are owned by two different entities. Some of them are owned by the applicant for this project. Some of them are owned by Era Energy and Cherokee. The three wells that this applicant owns outside of the oil remainder areas would be consolidated to, or would be abandoned. And the oil wells that Era and Cherokee own on the larger site, many of those would be addressed through the consent order that was agreed upon by both them and the commission. In total, there are 41 of Era and Cherokee's 66 wells would either be abandoned or they would be required to come in front of this commission to apply to retain them or abandon them. The other wells, about a third of those 66 wells, would remain. Era would have the ability to maintain those and continue operating those.
So about a third, so 20-some
Right.
Wells.
Exactly.
We'll continue out there for the time being. And then finally, just to be clear, this is also an important opportunity for our commission to end the litigation, and that's identified in condition 21. And I think that's also an important opportunity for us to just get the record clear. And then I will ask one other question, and our vice chair had pointed out to me that in special condition 23, while we do talk about any Native American human remains that might be found through the archaeological management research, that they would be left in situ, but it also allows for them to be relocated if it's determined that that's necessary. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about that and how unlikely that would be in this situation, or likely, and if we, depending on whether we have enough information or confidence at this time.
I think the process laid out in that condition is clear that the first step is not affecting those resources. If they're discovered, that they will remain in place and not be excavated or touched. As soon as anything is discovered, then work stops until that resource can be evaluated. Regarding the question about if and when relocation may become a possibility, I want to note that the commission's the Coastal Act is just one authority that comes into play with cultural resources. There are also very important federal laws that come into place here, and so I think the process that this condition lays out speaks to those, and it's more of a. There are multiple parts to the situation that would arise if indeed resources or sites are discovered. And those other regulations may indeed require more stronger protections than would be allowed under the Coastal Act and where those resources would remain in place.
Okay, thank you. Those are my comments.
Commissioner Groom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That conversation was provided some clarity for me, but is it possible to tell me how many oil wells are pumping now and how many oil wells will be pumping should we approve this?
The northern oil remainder area has, I think it's about 15 active wells, and the southern has about 12. If this project is approved, there would be 77 new wells that would come into being. So up to. And as I noted earlier, this is the applicant has proposed this as a maximum that they may ever want to drill out there. I don't think they anticipate reaching that number anytime soon. They have committed to a cap, an annual cap of, I think, no more than...
8 to 10.
Yes, exactly. 8 to 10 in the northern area, and I think 3 to 5 in the southern area.
And this would be done over, as it says, if conditions remain favorable, over the next 20 to 30 years.
Or longer.
But it's not going to happen in the next 12, 18, 24 months.
Exactly. And actually, beyond that, the applicant has said that within the first 36 months, they're not anticipating any drilling at all.
Okay.
They would be using that time to carry out the abandonment of those three wells and some of the other consolidation activities, moving some of the structures, like the office building that exists outside of the remainder areas, into those sites.
Thank you.
Commissioner Luevano?
Thanks. I thought Commissioner Groom was still talking. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to start by saying that I listened to all of the people who spoke today on behalf of the land with compassion. And if this were, if I had my druthers, if this were my choice, I would want this land preserved in its entirety for eternity. I'm not sure that we can do that. I mean, I don't think we can do that. And I understand the private property rights issues here. I don't want to repeat everything that my fellow commissioners have said. But I do want to remind everybody, and we had this conversation we've had it several times when we voted on Banning Ranch, but this is the last remaining coastal wetland bluff in Orange County. I live in Los Angeles County, and we have one remaining wetland in Los Angeles County that's near Playa Vista. So we're losing all of this rapidly, and I'm trying to figure out a way that we don't lose all of this. The area obviously has great value for many, many reasons. With specific regard to some of the comments made, I want to first of all acknowledge Mr. Ray and the comment that he made about Banning Ranch Conservancy not opposing consolidation of oil operations, and I appreciate that point, but that you are concerned about a couple of things. I think our staff has done a good job of addressing those concerns, and again, I won't repeat everything, but with regard to the buffers and the seismic activity. One of the concerns that Mr. Ray raised was with regard to this new steam drilling technique. Am I characterizing that accurately? Because I know steam drilling's been happening, but not in exactly this way. The creation of sinkholes and geysers and what that impact might be. Could staff respond to that?
It's my understanding that steam injection has been used on this oil field for many decades, dating back all the way to the 60s. Additionally, the use of that technology is very closely regulated by the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources. They have to authorize its use, and when it is being used, they monitor those wells very closely to ensure that pressure is maintained, and that if there's any indication that something is occurring that's anomalous, that it's addressed and rectified immediately.
Okay, so those aren't concerns that you have.
The situation with the sinkholes and the geysers and those types of things, that has never occurred on this field. It doesn't preclude that it may never, ever happen, but
right.
There are a lot of protections in place that would prevent it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and to that point, you know, nobody plans for a catastrophe, you know, and that's why they are catastrophes. And with regard to one of the comments that Mr. Schmitz made, and I appreciate everything that you said, but you made a comment with regard to sea level rise having no impact on the project, and I'm sure that there are studies that may show that, but you know, people in New Orleans never thought that sea level rise was going to impact the Lower Ninth Ward, and the Army Corps learned a big lesson down there. I spent a lot of time down there after Hurricane Katrina. So sea level rise is an immediate threat, in my opinion, and it's something that we cannot take lightly in any situation. With regard to Mr. Ray's comment about the public process, I wanted to ask, he mentioned that there had been either little or no input from the public on this proposal and wanted to know if we could do a 90-day public review period, and I wanted to get the staff's comment with regard to that, how that would impact this.
I'll make some initial remarks, and perhaps Chief Counsel Peterson would like to weigh in it as well. So there are six different plans that are required by our recommendation of the 23 special conditions. You know, we write them in a way that the performance standards are very, very specific, that the criteria is very specific. As a matter of fact, some of these conditions are so long, they're in an appendix. And so we don't normally have a separate public process for the review of those plans when they come in, as you know, in the work that you routinely do here at the Commission, and that we see this time in this hearing as that opportunity to actually comment on the detailed requirements of that plan, of each of those plans. So for me, I think it would be a bit cumbersome to figure out how to do that, but perhaps you'd like to weigh in a bit more.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Detmer. There have been a very limited number of situations where the Commission has instituted a formal public review comment process. Those have been in situations where
there's been some significant discretionary decision that still needs to be made about the plan, and the commission has thought that it's appropriate for that discretionary decision to come back before the commission, for the commission to act on that. And in those situations, then there's a formalized public comment review process that occurs. But in the overwhelming majority of situations, there isn't that kind of formal review process because the conditions are intended to be drafted in a way so that the criteria are definite enough that there's clarity about what satisfies or doesn't satisfy those conditions. That said, the plans that get submitted are public documents, so members of the public can request to review them, and they have the opportunity to submit comments on them if they wish.
Maybe Mr. Ray can come up quickly. I just want to make sure that the issue that he raised about public process is addressed. I mean, I hear what you're saying.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Steve Ray for Banyan Ranch Conservancy again. Our concern is because, and I think it was actually my argument was addressed by them, and I would repeat it, that these six steps that are needed are actually very significant and could result in significant change to the plans. And I think because of that, and we don't know what those will be or how those will be implemented or even when those are going to happen, there's a process, a long process there to go through, that it behooves the commission to allow the public to participate in that process because there may be some significant changes. We still contend that the CSS process could result in some significant environmental damage to the site. And so, we have a concern that we're not going to know everything, even if we get the public documents. You know, we can maybe send a letter to the commission, but I think a formal public review is the best way to ensure that it is fairly processed by the commission and allows full public review of what could be some significant changes as we go down the road. Thank you very much.
I would just point out that if the review from the other agencies resulted in or the plans resulted in some significant change, that significant change would have to come back to the commission, right, as an amendment to the CDP. The other thing that I have concerns about with regard to having a public review of the condition compliance is that it's likely that it would result in some disagreement about condition compliance, which would then have to come back and end up in front of the commission here. And like Chris said, and Allison noted as well, these are the criteria is very tight. There's not a lot of discretion there when we're looking at those plans. So it would be, I agree with Allison, be a very unwieldy system. The commission has in the past had conditions come back to the commission where they thought it was appropriate, where there was some discretion involved, but I would not recommend having a public review period. Now, these documents, like Chris had pointed out, are available to the public. I think one idea would be to just let the Conservancy know and receive those documents that they're available.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one idea.
Yeah, I think anything you can
Cassie,
do.
Of course, Cassie, you'd have to make sure that happens.
Yeah, I would also note that I have been very available to the Conservancy, to Mr. Ray and the other members of his group, to discuss the project, to share with him the public documents that have been submitted in support of it, to get on the phone, to meet in person, to discuss their concerns, hear from them solutions or other ways to address them. So I'm happy to continue to engage in that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other commissioner comments? Well, I'm going to make a couple of comments. I would like to echo the sentiment of my fellow commissioner, Commissioner Luevano, with respect to the application before us today. I come to this with a very heavy heart. It's a very difficult situation to address, being in a position to approve or disapprove this CDP. It's clear that as a nation, we need to get off of fossil fuels. And the continuation of using fossil fuels is leading to the degradation of our environment, and that is not that is an uncontroverted fact. And being in the position as a commissioner, we have to weigh the evidence before us, and hopefully we try and bring with our decision making a sense of compassion and understanding, and trying to listen with open hearts to the community members that come before us, and also hearing the and understanding legally what our requirements are under the Coastal Act. I will say I was a little dismayed by one of the comments made by the applicant about discounting this issue of settler colonialism. And I think in the future, remarks like that do no one any service, particularly if you look at the composition of this commission. That would be just a little point of advisement. Second, in this situation, we heard from our general counsel the exemptions that are available to the applicant with respect to the oil drilling, and I believe we heard 340 possible oil wells. We have reduced that down to 77 possible oil wells, with the understanding that only 8 to 10 will be drilled per year over a 20 to 30 year period. While I wish that we had the authority to stop all oil drilling, I don't think that we do have that authority. And this decision today to approve or disapprove the permit will end up in hopefully resolving the current litigation. I believe we've heard from the staff that has done, you know, an extraordinary job of trying to go above and beyond to place as many restrictions and tight constraints on the development envelope of the oil fields. We heard from staff about establishing tight criteria with respect to those things. We have 23 special conditions in addition to those that we normally have. And we have also provided for requirements that the applicant restore habitat and provide significant buffers around existing habitat. And I just believe that, unfortunately, you know, nobody likes, I think I speak for a lot of my fellow commissioners, it's a difficult decision that we're going to have to make, but I am going to support the motion to approve the development permit, because I think that is something that we are required to do under the law, given the circumstances and given the tight constraints that staff has taken to make sure that this is done in as responsible way, as protective of cultural resources, and as protective of environmental resources as we possibly can have. And as Mr. Ainsworth mentioned, if there are significant changes to the project, that will have to come back before us for a new CDP application. So there will be an opportunity for the public to weigh in, a CDP amendment, if I understand that correctly. And I therefore am going to be supporting this motion. Do I see any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Vanessa, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Groom?
Yes.
Groom, yes. Commissioner Howell?
Aye.
Howell, yes. Commissioner Kinsey?
Yes.
Kinsey, yes. Commissioner Luevano?
Yes.
Luevano, yes. Commissioner McClure?
Yes.
McClure, yes. Commissioner Pastor?
Yes.
Pastor, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Garcia-Ursic? No. Garcia-Ursic, no. Vice Chair Turnbull-Sanders?
Yes.
Turnbull-Sanders, yes. The vote is 8-1.
The permit is approved.
Madam Vice Chair, I have one more quick matter for you.
Thank you.
And that is item 16, which is the North Coast portion of the agenda. So the Pink Deputy Director's report contains two de minimis waivers for your consideration and for your information, copies of two emergency permits recently issued by that district office. So with regard to the waivers, we're aware of no opposition or controversy regarding them, and therefore we seek your concurrence in granting the waivers.
Do I see unanimous concurrence? Seeing no opposition, we do concur.
That's it.
Thank you. Do we have any commissioner comments before we conclude? Any reports? No. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.